Agenda. Paige, would you please read the consent agenda?
Item A, minutes for January 7th. Item B, an appropriation reimbursement for attendance to the International Code Conference, $1,927.01, second of two readings. Item C, an appropriation reimbursement to city for American Planning Association web training sessions, $960, second of two readings. Item D, an appropriation bank on Greater Charlottesville funding from the Coalition for Economic Opportunity, care of the Legal Aid Justice Center, $20,500, second of two readings. Item E, a resolution, MAP 21 grant application for construction of McIntyre Park Trail Bridge over Norfolk Southern Railroad, first of one reading. Item F, an ordinance, relocate Carver Precinct to Carver Recreation Center, second of two readings.
Okay. Anybody in the council would like to remove any item? If not, is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
And a second. Any discussion? If not, vote. Next item is a public hearing on stormwater utility. Staff has a brief report.
There's a PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, okay.
The year's coldest night so far. I appreciate you coming out. We're here tonight to present a proposal for funding a water resources protection program through the implementation of a stormwater utility fee. My name's Crystal Ritterwald, and I'm privileged to be here presenting on behalf of a very broad group of a team of people who have been involved with this process. That includes both city staff, very respectable advisory committee members, and reputable consultants. So again, this is a broad team effort to bring this proposal forward for consideration. Let's see if I can get this to go forward. The focus of the efforts to date have been to establish the right level of service for this community as it pertains to stormwater and water quality management. The focus is to determine the costs to provide that level of service, and then to evaluate the opportunities and the options for equitably distributing those costs. And as many of you know, these are efforts that have been ongoing since 2008. Since 2008, more information is available on a number of community needs and requirements, not the least of which are the state and the condition of our existing valuable infrastructure. That condition of failing pipes does relate to stormwater flooding and drainage challenges, and fundamentally is linked to community safety issues. Similarly, there are the impacts of escalating and prescriptive regulatory requirements and mandates, and updated information about the water quality of both our local and our regional waterways is a very relevant point, many facts of which are a lot clearer in 2013 than they were in 2008. Again, these issues pertain to or are related to community health and safety when we're talking about efforts related to clean water. And then we also have numerous efforts associated with the construction, the inspection, and the maintenance of what are called stormwater management facilities, whether those be on public or private property. These facilities exist for the purpose of treating stormwater so that we have less volume and cleaner quality water going to our waterways. Tackling these issues in a cost-effective manner is really the driver for developing a comprehensive water resources management program, and one that is informed by a master plan that is a long-term strategic approach to the projects that will address these challenges, but also based on the assurance that there will be available funding to implement what comes out of those plans. And that has not been the case to date. What you see here is a snapshot of our current stormwater funding. You'll see that essentially at $945,000, we have a program that provides a basic level of service. And it is not sufficient to meet the program mandates and needs that we see coming at us. So in recent years, we've had the good fortune of some specific funding being made available for infrastructure rehab, and that's been very effective. We've also had the opportunity for some outside funding for some really interesting green infrastructure projects, and as many of you were aware, very awesome stream restoration project, but that's not a sustainable funding approach. And so at this point, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Jean Haggerty from AMEC, and she's going to give you a briefing on the basis of the funding proposal.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Jean Haggerty from AMEC. Just want to follow up on what Crystal's been telling you and start to delve into the details a little bit of the program. As we started to work on where stormwater needed to go, the first thing we had to establish is some baseline priorities. And so looking at some of the drivers that we've just talked about, actually having some enhanced O&M on the existing system. You have an aging system, 50-plus miles of underground pipe that – can you hear me? No. I'm seeing lots of nods. Better? No? It's on. How's that? Better? No, still not. All right, I'm going to yell. Try to yell. I'll project more. All right. So the program priorities that we worked on with staff initially and then with the Citizens Advisory Committee was to make sure we understood where the program needed to go so we could start to set some program goals. So enhancing our existing O&M, $300 million asset in the ground, how do we make sure that we provide the right level of maintenance on that system? How do we meet these regulatory mandates going forward in a cost-effective way? One of the key items that Crystal alluded to was a master plan. There's no comprehensive document now that looks at how you're going to address all your stormwater needs, both in terms of regulatory compliance and in long-term investment in big capital projects. And finally, once we have that plan in place, how do we get those improvements done in the most cost-effective manner? So these are the priorities that we laid out to get the program going. We worked with the Citizens Advisory Committee, as we had in 2008 when we first looked at this project. We got a group of citizens together that were interested in spending some time with us and learning a little more about stormwater and giving us their opinions. Great group of folks, very engaged, gave us lots of their time, and the idea was to bring with them the diverse backgrounds. We have folks from the business community, from the faith-based community, from environmental groups. We asked them to all come together. I facilitated a lot of discussions to come up with what the program of services should look like for Charlottesville. Over three meetings, September and October of this year, about an eight-week period, we moved very quickly on this project. We took the information from 2008. We updated a lot of information, as Crystal told you. Got some good information over the last couple of years, especially on the regulatory front, and we looked at what the appropriate level of service should be for the community. So when we say that, what should you be doing? What are the costs for doing that? And we asked the committee to come to some consensus on some key policy findings. So what would this program look like? Dollars, way to pay for it, and I'll share those with you at the end. But I think the first thing they agreed upon was the mission statement for the program. This is about protecting public health and safety. This is about making sure that the impacts of stormwater runoff are controlled and that we continue to protect our natural resources. So the program of services, the bottom line numbers here, give you an idea of what we're talking about in terms of dollars. We're talking about raising somewhere between $1.6 million in FY14, growing a program with capital improvements to over $3 million in a five-year period. It's a significant amount of money. And so one of the key drivers for that, one of those, is to put some real money every year, dedicated funds, $1 million a year for 10 years, into rehabilitating that existing system. Adding to that, the master planning work, some inspection requirements you need to meet your regulatory requirements, starting to do that in capital investment in out years, and adding a program administrator, and if you go with the user fee, an incentive program to give people some financial incentives to do more on their property. So those are the key pieces that are in that program. So if we agree, and at least as a committee and staff, we agree that that's about the right level of funding needed, how do you pay for that? Where do you get those funds? So we can generate revenue through a user fee, which is what we've been tasked to look at. We can do that through raising general tax money. That's the council has that authority. That would be based on the tax value of your property. or we could reappropriate current funds. Can you find $1.6 million in your existing budget in order to fund the program without having to do any of those things? So those are really the alternatives that you have. So again, our task was to really look at a user fee. What would that look like for Charlottesville? There is legislation in Virginia that says specifically what a user fee entails. There are about a dozen user fees already in place here in Virginia. It is a fee for service. It has to be tied directly to the program of costs. To set those programs, you have to bring in dedicated funds, and they have to be spent on that program of services. So this is a pretty common approach now to stormwater management, not that different than what's happened with water and wastewater over the years. Anybody that's my age or older, and Robbie, I mean to look at you, that has worked on these water and sewer issues. We used to pay water and sewer out of our general taxes. Regulatory requirements, investment in infrastructure, we started to pull those things out, more transparent, understand what the drivers were. We're in a similar place with stormwater. So how do we divide those costs across the community? How do you take that $1.6 million and find a way to pretty fairly distribute those costs? In Charlottesville, you have really good information on aerial photography, geographic information system about your parcels. You know how much impervious cover is on a parcel, impervious being all those hard surfaces, your roof, your driveways, the development that causes runoff to leave your property. We looked at all that data, and we were able to come back and say, all right, we don't have to do what a lot of other communities are doing, which is estimating this kind of stuff, impervious on their property. We can actually measure it. And so we've set a billing unit, which is a little different from other communities when you're talking to folks, at 1,000 square feet per billing unit. So every 1,000 square feet of impervious that you have in your parcel, you'd have a billing unit, okay? So think about that as we go through this. In Charlottesville, with the data we have now, you have about 64,000 billing units. All right, so we have a program of services. We know how many billing units that we have. We take that number and we run a rate model to look at what would the fee need to be on each billing unit in order to generate the money needed. So we have two options that we've kind of worked through in some detail. The first one just funds basically the new program costs. It's the general fund, it's the non-general fund section. So the stuff that's already in general fund stays in general fund. Other costs are covered by the user fee. So that first option is $2.30 per billing unit per month, okay? So that would translate into $27.60 per billing unit per year. All right, so compare that to the second option we looked at, which was you would take money from the general fund, that's all stormwater, the $900,000 we talked about earlier, and also move that into the fee. To do that, you'd have to have a higher rate at $3.25 to cover all those costs. And that rate, as you see, we projected 5 years, keeping it flat for the first three. You see a little bit of rate increase in years 4 and 5. We don't want to mislead anybody. This is not a five-year program. We're talking about stormwater now. This is the first 5 years of a longer-term process. We're talking about this, looking at 10 years for some of your rehabilitation, your regulatory requirements, your permits 15 years out. If we bond some of these costs, that's a 20-year commitment. All right, so think about this. It is a long-term commitment. I don't want anybody to think that it would not be. So how does that impact the average resident in town? I think this is a question that we get a lot. This graph shows how much impervious is on most of the residential properties. Most folks are in that second category between 1 and 2 billing units. There are substantial amounts in the third billing unit. So if you've been able to look at some of the information that the city has out there on the website, you can see how much impervious you have on your site. There's a tool to do that. So for 2,000 square feet or less, if you take that billing unit, so it's $55 a year for most folks. At the $2.30 level, that would go up to $78 a year at the 3.25 level. So we're trying to, again, give a couple of options of what this would be and how that would affect things. There are some properties that are at the far end of this. And one of the positive things about using a 1,000 square foot billing unit and not any other way of doing this is it doesn't matter if it's residential or non-residential. We're measuring impervious surface. Right? Land use doesn't matter. Impervious is impervious, it runs off, we're doing a total calculation based on not using land use codes. So whether it's a parking lot that's outside City Hall, or whether that's a parking lot, somebody's home, they have 1,000 square feet impervious, they get charged in the same manner. One of the key things we spent a little bit of time lately on is the credit policy. Is there a reason to credit folks for managing stormwater on their property? We've talked to lots of folks that through public open houses and other things that are doing things on their property already that are impacting the runoff from that property. So we looked at a preliminary policy with our advisory committee that said having a credit that would be try to take the peak rate off. In other words, you're detaining water on site. You can get a 20% credit. And if you're doing water quality work on the site, you're treating that water, that's really helping you comply with your regulatory requirements. You can get up to a 40% credit. And then if you want to do something really cool and above and beyond, then you could apply for something more. The key note at the bottom here is that credits have to be tied to the program, all right? So what I mean by that is, what's the avoidance of cost? If somebody is doing something privately on their property, and how does that keep the public portion that everybody's paying, how does that avoid cost for the public portion? So you don't want to be paying people for private services that aren't benefiting the community. And the way the rate's set, that if you give lots of money back in credits, it does affect the rate. You still need to raise $1.6 million. So if you're giving lots of credits for things, you've got to make sure it ties to the program, you've got to make sure that's a benefit to the program, or it doesn't make a lot of sense. So we've worked on that issue quite a bit. And so when we come to the recommendations around the rate, we want to compare that to what would it look like if you raised taxes to generate the same amount of money. So right now, a penny on your tax rate here in Charlottesville raises about $540,000 a year. So you need to raise your tax rate by about 3 cents to get the same amount of money in the first year. What that does is only taxed properties pay that. There are properties that are tax exempt that get included in the user fee that don't get included if you're raising taxes. The other option is you do need to fund $1.6 million from the city fund if you're trying to find some money to pay for it under existing conditions, and that will grow over time. And it also does assume that we'll be selling bonds. About 50% of the capital would sell bonds to keep the rates down. So just to give you an idea of how the conversations with our advisory committee went, we tried to find some common language and that we all could agree on. And I won't say that everybody on the committee thought that we should pay more for stormwater, but what they did agree was that there's a compelling case for making sure we increase funding. Funding for these kind of things, including maintaining our system and doing some integrated planning, that the level of service that we came up with, that $1.6 million, the rehabilitation, balancing that with planning, balancing that with regulatory compliance, is the right level of service for Charlottesville. It's a pretty fair and equitable approach. Using impervious area as opposed to value of your property to set a rate made sense to folks. Having a credit policy to incentivize people to do more was very positive. Using bonds right now are relatively inexpensive to borrow. It's an opportunity for the community to borrow at a low rate, invest over time. If you're going to put in new stormwater pipes, you hope they'll be there for another 50 years. Bonding for those kind of projects makes sense. There was a recommendation that if you're going to go with this idea of a utility, that you keep a citizens advisory committee involved. You have them come in and maybe quarterly. How's the program functioning? How are things changing? Okay, how do we make sure that the program is not growing too quickly? You're getting done what you said to get done. And there was some even comments about maybe you sunset this in some manner. And I think I had a question when I first came about what that means. In the program of services now, we have a 10-year rehabilitation program that is really dealing with the most severe issues you have in your system. There are another 40 miles of pipe that will need some kind of maintenance. Your permit requirements are 3 permit cycles just to comply with the Chesapeake Bay TMDL, which is a 15-year program. And if you borrow, you're going to borrow over 20-year cycles. So those are the kind of things to keep in mind if you're talking about sunsetting, is all the things that you're going to commit to getting started, that this is probably a 20-year program. So the committee encourages the city council to also provide leadership on regional collaboration. I think it's an important point that stormwater doesn't know jurisdictional boundaries. You're getting water coming in from the county, your water from the city is leaving, going downstream. So how do we be as efficient as we can by building some partnerships with other groups so that we're doing the best work possible? So I'm going to turn it back to Crystal, because what we've come up with now is an actual proposal. It's a draft stormwater ordinance that codifies all the things that I just mentioned in one place and that the council is going to consider tonight.
So at this point, the ordinance in front of you, the proposed ordinance, authorizes the establishment of a stormwater utility and the setting of service charges to support the stormwater management program. It sets the rate on this billing unit of 1,000 square feet of impervious area per property, as Gene described, and it would be a snapshot in time measured on December 31st of each calendar year. And that database gets updated as property and impervious surfaces change, so there may be changes in impervious surface from year to year. It sets the billing unit at $3.25, and per our last discussion, that was the approach we took to afford council flexibility on deciding on a final rate. There are waivers of fees consistent with the Virginia Code, and we can speak to that if you're interested. It requires the development of a system of credits for council approval. It establishes billing and collection procedures, including sending the bill twice per year to property owners using the real property tax billing system. So that would be in April and then in November. It establishes an appeals process that is similar to appeals process for other fees and bills that are sent out. And the effective date of the utility would be January 1st of 2014. Again, that first bill would come out in April of 2014. I think most folks are aware that we've tried to do a large amount of public engagement and tried to put as much information as possible out there and be as transparent as possible about this process. There are a lot of numbers built into a proposal like this. It's a large proposal that covers a lot of different topics, many of which are sort of near and dear to people's hearts, others of which you may have strong opinions should or shouldn't be included. But we fielded a lot of folks through the open house sessions. Since we had the last meeting, staff has been dealing with about 30 different comments and questions. I hope that folks who have participated in that process feel that there have been very transparent and comprehensive responses provided. And certainly, I think by the position statements that council has received and by the comments that we'll hear today, this is a topic that a lot of folks in the community have engaged on, and it should hopefully provide you with some good material to make a decision on. And clearly, we're here to field any questions or comments. Oh, I'm sorry. If I could just say real quick, the next steps will be tonight to receive comments on the public ordinance, on the stormwater utility ordinance. If council chooses, we would then move the ordinance to a second reading and a final vote. If approved, as I mentioned, that first billing would occur in spring 2014 for the first 6 months of that program. Thank you.
We have a public hearing on stormwater utility. Before we start that, are there any clarification questions from the council members?
I'd be interested to know what other were there other options in addition to a new utility tax that your committee was tasked with considering or chose to consider?
I guess I would remind council that when we went through this exercise in 2008, the committee at that time that had a very similar profile to the folks on this committee spent a lot more time talking about various funding approaches. The recommendation that came to council then in 2008 really was about the utility fee being established as the proposed approach, and that was what this exercise was tasked with focusing on. So we didn't review of the variety, but for presenting what the options would look like if it was done differently.
Thank you.
I actually have a question. So could you clarify how much of our current tax dollars are used today and like for the past, you know, sort of average for the past 5 years?
Sure. I think the correct number is $830,000 from the general fund.
The general fund.
There have in past years been dollars from the gas utility. Those have been shifted in to be covered by the rate in the proposals before you.
Okay.
And I think that's it.
So $830,000.
From general fund.
How much for the gas?
And then we have in, it's at a level of, I think, 113. So, but we have, and then we have in the past, I think, 3 years, had about $1.35 million of capital funding approved to do some aggressive rehab.
And that was also from?
That was from the general fund.
From the general fund.
Capital fund.
So 1.3 total?
1.35.
Since total.
Since the decision in early 08.
Okay. Just trying to figure out how to equate this with the rate, with our tax rate. So the 830 is about 1.5 cents.
Yes.
That's what we have been putting from our taxes, if you want to consider it from real estate taxes. Towards this, but there are also capital funds.
Correct.
That also came from the general fund. So it's really more than...
Correct. But in years prior to 2008, that was much less consistent and at varying levels based on the other competing programs and projects.
Seems like about 4 cents in taxes if you count both, is that right?
But 1.35 wasn't
every
year.
Well, the capital funding also includes bonding, so there's some different number crunching behind that.
So before you sit down...
I have questions, too.
Okay, let me just follow the same question slightly. So $1.6 million you'll be raising additional, which is approximately 3 cents worth of real estate tax. Is that correct?
Correct. So the program costs 1.6, and the rate proposed would bring in money sufficient for that.
Okay.
Well, that's in year one. It goes up from there.
Correct. And the rate, if you saw the table, shows it level for 3 years and then a slight bump in years, fiscal year 17 and 18. And the goal with running a rate model over a five-year period is to try to have some level rate for the beginning years and then be able to afford the capital investments with bonding on those capital projects that will really ramp up in years 4 and 5.
And I know you have a question, but can you, and I don't know if this is a question for you or for Mr. Jones, but what is our current debt ceiling when it comes to bonding authority, and how close would this push us to that debt ceiling?
Well, our debt ceiling is 8% right now, our debt service ceiling. But I do believe that this would be a
we really can't hear y'all. I don't know if the mics are on.
That's on.
Maybe get
closer. Okay. This would be like a utility. It would be would not be counted as part of that debt service. So it would not count towards that.
Mm-hmm.
But currently it's 8%.
And how much what value in bonds is proposed within this? What dollar value?
I'm going to have Jean come up because she recently crunched the numbers.
For the lower rate, the $2.30, there's $3.4 million in bonds for the first 5 years. And for the $3.25 rate, there's $4.2 million in bonds for those first 5 years.
And so is there a reason we're not taking out the full price of the capital improvements?
Yes, and we did talk to your financial folks about how much you would bond. We're bonding about 50% of what could be bonded, so it's a balance of cash for that rehabilitation work that you're doing, and all the other capital, the major planning and the retrofits would be under the capital. I mean, it's one way to go, and it's kind of a balance. You certainly can work with those numbers.
And that's why we keep under our debt ceiling.
Right. When we talk to your financial folks, they're concerned about trying to bond everything. Now, this is, as I think as City Manager said, the ability to use this as special revenue to pay for those bonds helps you, but you need to get going first. The first couple of years, you'll have to rely on the integrity of the city before you can get those revenues, kind of some history behind that.
Is there any state and federal money out there for these kinds of things?
Well, we recently know that there's, I think, $35 million that the governor's flagging for cost share for water quality improvements, and that's not necessarily directly available, but what we understand is if you have funding to provide us cost share, you have a greater chance of accessing those dollars. If you have none, you can't do the cost share piece. So I think there's a real opportunity to leverage some other funds.
Great. Right. And that would impact these rates, but we just can't.
Well, I mean, it could either impact the rates or we can get more done faster, and we look at shifting the kind of focus priorities of the program in future years.
Would that decision be made by us, or would that be a staff decision?
To pursue those funds?
If we got them. So, I'm thinking optimistically. If we got them, the question that Ms. Smith was asking is that would that lower, you know, would the decision of whether it would lower the rates or increase the program or speed it up be a staff decision or a council decision?
I mean, staff can't change the rate, so it would be a council decision.
That's what I assume. Yeah. So it would come back to us.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And, you know, if we were to pursue those funds, it would be similar to other requests to go after a grant. There would be a description of what the purpose would be.
I personally would look forward to that discussion.
Yes, I would too.
And then if we needed to change the rate either up or down over the years, do you have to change the ordinance?
Well, the rate would be considered every year with the other utility rates. So it would fall in sequence with those.
I see. Right.
And so, yes, it would require a change as it does for water and sewer rates.
Okay. So I have just a really specific question. We've been getting a lot of email about this. And really, the preponderance of it has been very positive. People who supported it maybe had a tweak or two. And one of the folks we heard from was the area Board of Realtors. And generally supporting the proposal. But one of the things that they noted was that the city properties can't be, by law, included in this because we can't apparently charge ourselves. And that they said that they thought the city had about 3,000 billing units. Is that accurate?
Yes, we fielded a question, and that's it. That's billing units associated with city-owned parcels.
Okay. And you're saying tonight that altogether in the city there are about 64,000 billing units. Does that include those three?
It does not include those. Okay. Those are the billable units.
So we would call those eligible or available.
Because one of the things they were looking at was that if the city were to fund part of this out of general fund, that it would kind of go for that. It sounds like that would be a much smaller proportion of the general fund than we're actually proposing. So
that's true.
We'd be offsetting our own 3,000 plus a lot more by doing the lower amount. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So it's about 5%.
5%. Yes, right.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
I have a question, but would that include the public streets as well?
It does not.
Okay, because I think that's also what they're driving at, is that the keeping that contribution in the general fund is acknowledging that there's a lot of runoff that private property owners don't generate. And so I am very interested in that lower rate because of that, because there is that contribution that stays.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and an expectation that the drainage network in that public right-of-way drains reliably.
And the other thing that we talked about, we exchanged a lot of emails today, and it was about inserting language in the ordinance about the advisory committee that would be responsible for evaluating the appropriateness of the rates as we reach certain milestones or benchmarks. And that's not in the copy that was posted because we just kind of talked about that. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the language that you sent us because I find it reasonable and that we would be dealing with the specifics through regulation as in terms of the responsibilities, the specific responsibilities of this advisory committee, but that advisory committee would be charged with looking at how we're paying down the debt, how we are accomplishing our goals of reaching TMDL, of replacing all of our lines. I understand it's very hard to set a hard and fast date for the sunsets because there's, as you say, 50 miles of line to replace. But it's also very important, I think, for the public to understand that we are going to be looking at this. And you suggested a five-year cycle, looking at this in a regular basis so that we begin to understand when we could start anticipate maybe lowering rates or, you know, finishing our commitment to a capital investment.
Would it be appropriate to read the language of that proposed addition before we have the public hearing just so people know what it is?
That would be good.
I have it in front of me. I'm happy to just read out what you sent us.
Sure.
Or do you have it?
Well, there was a two. You're welcome to, but I just would say there's a two-part response that was provided. One was council making a commitment on the establishment of a standing committee, but not putting language in code at this time, so that we can further consider sort of thoughtfully and accurately and appropriately what those duties should be. And the other would be to insert some language that still affords that at a later date, but then it needs to be another code amendment or a code amendment versus a one-time that spells out all the details.
But any advisory committee will be advisory to City Council, and they'll not be making decisions. Correct.
I think it would be very similar to the role that the current advisory committee played, which was, truth check the level of service And if we're committing to a program that we've presented to accomplish X, Y, and Z, is that being done, or has there been a diversion of focus? And I think, you know, to keep the program true to what it's being established to accomplish, and then to consider perhaps necessary changes or evolution of the program based on water quality, the regulatory requirements, what we learn and accomplish through that rehabilitation, not necessarily to prescribe what the program does, but to be, you know, advisory and ensure that all the stakeholder perspectives are appropriately in the process.
Are there any questions before we start a public hearing?
I think it needs to be read.
You want to do that first. I do actually have one question, and then maybe you can read that. Mm-hmm. So for the purpose of the debate about how much tax dollars we should keep in funding, do we have a percentage of the total impervious surface, regardless of billing units, that is not going to be have a utility fee imposed on it? Therefore, is sort of in the public domain.
Yeah, and I think there's two answers to that. There's 3,004 billing units that are city properties, okay, that have parcels and properties. And then there's the public right-of-way,
right,
the street system.
And that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I don't think we've calculated what that is, but that's something we can get for you.
Okay. I just wondered if we knew that.
No questions.
Thank you.
Any questions or clarification before you have public hearing?
Do you want to read?
Shall I read this?
Sure.
This is just what you sent us, a proposed section 10-109 advisory committee. City Council shall appoint a 9-member citizen advisory committee for the purpose of conducting periodic assessments of program priorities, compliance measures, and funding needs, including potential adjustments in the stormwater utility fee rate once specific program objectives or milestones have been satisfied. B. The committee will include but not be limited to representatives of the city's business community, city residents and homeowners, and individuals with technical expertise in stormwater management systems and water quality standards. The initial appointments will include 3 members appointed for a 1-year term, 3 members appointed for a 2-year term, and 3 members appointed for a 3-year term. Thereafter, all appointments shall be for 3-year terms. The initial appointments will be made effective January 1st, 2014. And C, the specific duties of the committee will be presented to City Council for adoption prior to January 1st, 2014, when these fees take effect.
Any other comments for clarification before we have a public hearing? I would like to make one, nothing to do with you guys, thank you.
Thank you.
I'll make one clarification on my part. I was amazed to read the headline in Daily Progress that I was opposed to this utility. My questions at that meeting were, I was not ready to support it that day till I discussed the financing. And we will be discussing some of that today. So, but I do not write headlines, but I do read them. First person to speak is Jack Brown. Please, Jack Bone or Brown?
Brown.
Please come and speak. You have 3 minutes to present your ideas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. My name is Jack Brown. I live on Derry Road in the city. I've been a city resident for 28 years. I'm here today speaking also as the board chair of the Rivanna Conservation Society, an organization of 2 decades of history safeguarding the Rivanna River with over 900 members. RCS has been involved in the issue of stormwater for more than 2 decades. Working with the Southern Environmental Law Center and the UVA Conservation and Environmental Law Clinic, RCS presented to the City of Charlottesville specific recommendations on how to improve the city's stormwater codes and ordinances. So we are delighted to see the city has taken up our recommendations, and we're pleased to have our executive director serve on the advisory committee, helping to build a consensus around the Water Resources Protection Plan and the proposal for the stormwater utility. Simply put, the Water Resources Protection Program is simple, fair, and well-reasoned. It is a solution to the problem beneath our streets, and we support it. As council members, you care for the health and welfare of those of us who live here in Charlottesville. Yet for decades now, elected leaders that have preceded you have known about our crumbling infrastructure and yet have not established the political will or the fiscal commitment to address the problem. If council continues to ignore stormwater runoff pollution, we'll have increases in the pollution in our rivers and lakes, contaminated drinking water, flooding, and sewage overflows, all of which have costly consequences for our health and homes. Charlottesville citizens are counting on you, the council, to act. This is especially true now because the decisions to solve this problem have been ignored in the past. We have kicked the can down the road, or in this case, down the storm sewer. As someone who lives in Charlottesville, I rely on council to protect our environment, our health and safety, and to assure our underground environment is as well cared for as our above-ground environment. As our elected leaders, it's your job to resolve the problems that are causing stormwater pollution runoff that threatens our citizens, and we at RCS appreciate you taking on this issue. At the last council meeting, Councilman Norris asked if this issue should be a priority now, when there are so many other problems facing the community, and RCS responds with a resounding yes. Clean water, or increasingly dirty water, affects every person in the community. Pollution touches young and old, the sick and the well. It has no regard for race, ethnicity, or economic status. And while it may not be so dramatic or heart-wrenching as many of the issues that you do deal with, it is insidious and it gets worse over time. While the consequences of stormwater runoff pollution are often hidden from sight, we do know that there are serious consequences. So in summary, I commend this proposal to you with our strong support, and on behalf of Ivana Conservation and those of us who live in the city of Charlottesville, we thank you and staff for your willingness to deal with this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Kirk Bowles, I think that's.
Good evening, Hooja and fellow members of the council. My name is Kirk Bowers. I live in the county, and I represent the Sierra Club this evening as the conservation chair for the Piedmont Group and over our over 1,000 members. I'm also a licensed professional engineer, and I've worked in the stormwater field for over 30 years, since 1984. With the Sierra Club, Piedmont Group support and encourage passage of the Stormwater Utility Fee Ordinance by the City of Charlottesville. We believe that the Stormwater Utility Ordinance will support a program of rehabilitation and maintenance of stormwater systems throughout the city by providing a dedicated fund through user-supported fees. The stormwater utility fee is similar to a water bill, with the fee being paid by the user for direct use of the stormwater system. Those without impervious areas would not be levied a user fee or a tax. We also encourage continuing education to the public about the stormwater program in Charlottesville, Virginia. The stormwater regulations are rapidly changing, with full implementation set to begin in July 2014. In order for the public to understand the new regulations and the Stormwater Utility Ordinance, strong public education is required in continuing awareness of the problems and learning how to deal with these issues. Forums and hands-on training programs are recommended to educate homeowners and business owners on the use and implementation of stormwater credits for reduction of stormwater utility fees. We feel that education really helps in helping the public to understand the stormwater issues. This is not a, you're not the first. In 1993, Virginia Beach established a stormwater utility fee, and they've been using it ever since. And it comes in very handy to help repair their storm sewer systems. One other recommendation I'd like to make personally is do not use CMP, corrugated metal pipe. It only lasts 50 years. If you use concrete pipe, you'll get a lot longer service and a much better price. One last thing, the big picture, is the people in the Chesapeake Bay, the fishermen, would appreciate all efforts to help save the bay and to save their businesses. Years ago, when I was the county engineer for Greene County, we brought a group of fishermen up to visit with the farmers, and there was an exchange of ideas and information. Everybody learned a lot from that session. So we have to keep that in mind. This is a much broader picture than just Charlottesville. Again, the Sierra Club supports your efforts. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Daphne Spain.
Good evening, and thank you for hearing us. I am Daphne Spain. I'm professor of urban and environmental planning at the University of Virginia. And I am here tonight to speak in favor of the stormwater utility. I'm also representing students who are very interested in the future environment and indeed are committed to helping preserve the environment for future generations. Some of my students are here tonight. I wanted them to learn how planning issues play out in public meetings and how environmental policy is made, how the ideas are generated, how the policy is made and implemented, and funding, and how it's funded. I became aware of this issue because of work with a class I'm teaching on planning for nonprofits. And Robbie Savage of the Rivanna Conservation Society has helped me organize that class to test water quality in the Rivanna River. And that's what we're doing. But we're also interested in these larger issues. And I'd like to mention that we have the luxury of living in a community with very clean air because we have very little industry. So we're not concerned as much with air quality. That means that water quality is our primary concern. And I like three parts of the proposal. One is that it includes both residential and commercial properties. Two is that it includes tax-exempt and exempt properties. And three, that it includes or encourages the reduction in impervious surfaces, and indeed by reviewing the surfaces on properties every year, it encourages the creation of pervious surfaces to slow the runoff of water. Sorry, slow the water runoff into the storm drain system. So I hope that the council will vote affirmatively for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Patrick Calvert.
Hello, Mayor, Council. My name is Pat Calvert. I am a city resident and property owner, so I will be personally affected by this. But I come to you tonight as your riverkeeper for James River Association. So wearing two hats tonight. As a Seville resident property owner, my home is on a piece of property that has a little feeder stream to the impaired Meadow Creek, and it took a long time to get Meadow Creek in the shape that it's in, and a great deal has gone on to undo that damage that's happened, largely due to urban stormwater. But I'm not the only one who plays in that creek, and my child plays in that creek, and many of your children probably play in that creek, maybe even yourselves, hopefully. But Meadow Creek, Moores Creek, Shinks Branch, these are all other streams that are being whacked every day with every big rain. If anybody drove over the 250 bypass over the weekend and saw all the stormwater that goes under that bridge, under the Free Bridge, after a big rainfall, it's significant. It's something that's noticeable and it speaks. We would like to see these waters, the city's waters, the streams and creeks, parts of the Rivanna River that I just mentioned, removed from the impaired waters list, the EPA's dirty waters list. They don't deserve that. They deserve better. And the river can't speak for itself. So I'm here to sort of assume that role, or at least remind us to do so. In doing that, let's be clear. This proposed stormwater utility is not a tax on the rain. It is a fee. It's been equitably designed. It's been carefully designed in order to mitigate, to protect, and to help restore our creeks and rivers. It's not a tax. It shouldn't be referred to as such. Another common argument that I hear is this proposed utility to be funded at undue cost to city taxpayers. It's going to cost money. It's not going to happen on its own. But it needs to be a dedicated source of funding. One can say that we're already paying the costs of filthy waters. We've got them. We have impaired bodies of water. People who play in those streams paddle, walk, let their animals play in them, enjoy them, already are paying the cost, have been paying those costs for years. So when you start to question whether or not this is worth it, consider the true cost, not just the bottom line. Stormwater represents the single fastest growing source of pollution to our Ravana River, the James River, and to the Chesapeake Bay, the single largest source of pollution and the fastest growing. Improving water quality in our streams, it's not a pipe dream. It's not make-believe science. It's real, and with council support, water quality improvement can be made a reality through green infrastructure, through measurable, cost-effective means. This is the way to do it, this utility. So on behalf of the board, membership of James River Association, I encourage you to support this proposed stormwater utility and to capitalize on this opportunity to improve our public water and health. And thank you for your time.
Ray Berry.
Mr. Mayor, ladies and gentlemen of council, my name is Ray Berry. And it is a pleasure to be able to come down and give you all a piece of my mind. I don't do it very often, so I have some left. They say that taxation is the process of plucking the most feathers from the goose with the least hissing. Now, there are some people who feel that taxation and fees are somehow different, but my wallet doesn't think so. So this is a taxation, and I am here to hiss. I looked at the map that showed my property on Dairy Road, and it seems that I have 6,000 square feet of impervious surface. And according to the people who made that map and are interpreting this and wish that you would go along with them, they have said that my 68,000 square feet of grass and woodlands cannot absorb the runoff from my roof. If you recall, back in the early 1980s, the city went around and smoked all of the storm drains in the city. And those who had smoke coming out of their gutters were told to take their downspouts out of the sanitary sewer system and run a new sewer line. And I was one of those who did. So we now have storm drainage that we know where it goes. In my case, three of them feed willow trees, and one feeds a wooded area about 30 feet from my house. None of those is within 50 feet of my property line. There is no way any water is running from my roof to the city streets or any city property. I do have a driveway, and that certainly there could be a tax or a fee for. But I think we ought to look at the way in which they have proposed to set this fee, because I think it's very unfair. In other ways, I agree with my neighbor on Dairy Road that it's a fine idea to do this. It's probably time it be done, and I thank you for your time.
Sorry. I thought I had it on. I did that.
Maybe at a new timer.
Peyton Williams.
Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, thank you all for allowing me to speak this evening. My name is Peyton Williams, and I come tonight to urge you to approve the Water Resources Protection Plan and the Stormwater Utility. I do this because of my strong belief that the care of our natural environment is essential to the health and welfare of all living things. Water, clean water, is the source of life, and we have to do all we can to protect it. I believe the Stormwater Utility proposal is straightforward, fair, and equitable. An asphalt driveway, parking lot, road, or roof functions just like a stream and allows large amounts of polluted water to flood directly into our local streams. Without the chance to have natural filters hold or eliminate the flow. These pollutants threaten our ecosystem. And our ecosystem includes the city of Charlottesville and the surrounding streams and rivers. We must think about what is happening and act today to lessen their effect. While the consequences of stormwater runoff pollution are often hidden from sight, they bear serious consideration because the deterioration of aging pipes and infrastructure threatens the health and safety of Charlottesville. As a scuba diver, I know firsthand the importance of clean water in an ecosystem. And while we like to think of this city as an entity unto itself, the fact remains how pollution drains from the streams and sewers of our city to the Rivanna River and on into the James and then into the Chesapeake Bay. We have a responsibility to protect not only our own water quality, but also that of our downstream neighbors. While there are those in our community who say that we can deal with this threat to our waterways at a later time, that's exactly what previous city councils have done, year after year after year, with the result that we have pipes and interceptors that are more than 100 years old, and they are failing. The cost of remediation increases with each passing year, and we must be good stewards of both public monies and natural resources and act now, not push it off to some future date when the cost will be more onerous both to us as taxpayers and to our quality of life. The federal and state governments are pressing local governments to address their stormwater problems, and the Clean Water Act mandates that we do something and do it soon. There are programs both at the state and federal levels that allow for sharing funds that Charlottesville needs to lessen the direct cost to the city. The state is offering $35 million this year. We need to be in a position to receive these funds. If this measure is not passed soon, Charlottesville will not be eligible for these funds. The fee will be a consistent funding source for the work needed. As a man of faith, I believe that we are all stewards of our environment and bear the responsibility to care for the creation around us. We are following our own nest, and I am quite sure that this is not the intention of our Creator. For this reason, I believe that the houses of worship need to step up, just as we are asking all property owners to do. They have sprawling parking lots that are contributing to the problem, then it's not unreasonable to expect that they should become part of the solution. A green sanctuary does not apply just to the building, but also to the property controlled by a house of worship. In my view, what the staff has proposed is fair and equitable to the citizens of Charlottesville, and I give them a lot of credit for their efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope you will support the utility bill.
Dan Sweet.
Good evening. My name is Dan Sweet, and as a city resident, homeowner in the Rock Creek watershed, and a practicing water resources professional, I'm here today to voice my support for the proposed Water Resources Protection Program and Stormwater Utility. Within my own neighborhood, I am fortunate to experience the rain gardens at Smith Aquatic Center, the rainwater harvesting system at Buford Middle School, and the stormwater retrofits in Forest Hill Park. I smile when I see the sweeper units and vacuum trucks that maintain the stormwater pipe infrastructure that receives the runoff from my residents and streets. I truly am a water geek. In my professional life, I have had the honor to be involved in the Meadow Creek Golf Course Stream Restoration Project, the Meadow Creek Stream Restoration Project, and the Moores Creek Wetland Restoration Project, while located just across the city-county line, receive city stormwater discharge. These things fill me with a strong sense of civic pride and inspiration and remind me daily of Charlottesville's commitment to environmental stewardship. They are an integral part of what makes this city, for me, a great place to live, work, and raise my son. However, in the same breath, I realize that these and the other citywide maintenance practices, retrofits, and site design features are, no pun intended, a drop in the bucket. While I know that the 17 stormwater retrofits that the city has implemented since 2001 represent stormwater reductions and help protect our water resources, I also know firsthand how hard it is to account for these improvements at the watershed scale. Only through a comprehensive watershed approach can the health and integrity of our city's water resources be restored. I see evidence every day of our deteriorating stormwater conveyance system and I am acutely aware of the changing legislation as it relates to municipal stormwater management. As a property owner subject, in my estimates, to one billing unit under the proposed stormwater utility, or roughly the price of one cup of coffee a month, or the price I'm about to spend to go get carpet spot remover to mitigate the impacts of my new puppy, a six-month, half-year billing cycle, I know that I am willing and able to make this contribution to help the city incorporate new regulations, maintain existing stormwater infrastructure, and plan for and implement water quality improvements that will protect and restore the integrity of our waterways and natural spaces. But I can't make this decision. Only you can. I urge you to approve the proposed Water Resources Protection Program and Stormwater Utility without further delay. Thank you.
Rebecca Quinn.
Rebecca Quinn, 104 4th Street. I'm glad to know I'm not the only water geek in town. As a water resources engineer, perhaps some would say it's not surprising I support the stormwater utility, even though I don't work directly in stormwater these days. But I'm a new property owner, which means I'm also a property taxpayer, a water rate payer, what's everything else, and a gas client. Luckily, I will be cooking with gas here soon. As we heard, by law, certain entities are exempt from the fee or any charges under this utility. But when I read the statute, I didn't see a limit, and so I appreciate hearing that y'all are considering, at least what I heard, understood you to say, you're considering putting some general funds in, not just because the city's owned properties generate runoff, but to make sure that there's a sort of a consistency there. So my first question for you is, will you indeed do that? My second question, it's better to fix on site than to have to build something somewhere else that's going to require long-term maintenance. In Maryland, we didn't give people credit for stormwater management in our floodplain program because we knew 30, 40, 50, 70, 100 years later, maintenance may not be continued. So what I want to hear is, will you reevaluate the zoning and code requirements to reduce the requirements for vast areas of largely unused parking, especially at retail? That will allow and encourage those owners of all that asphalt to convert some of that space to, you know, infiltration basins and add more trees. And even though we have good air quality, I think we all want more trees, and air quality will benefit that as well. And lastly, someone said primarily the previous investment, other than some large general fund transfers, were provided by the general fund. And there was mention of some transfer of gas utility income that has been put into stormwater. Now that I'm a ratepayer, I find that doubly concerning. In fact, I even question whether there's an abuse of fiduciary responsibilities if you have a permitted income from only gas ratepayers to be used for the general purpose of stormwater management. So I want to hear specifically that you will not only not continue the practice of taking gas revenues for stormwater, but not take gas revenues for any other purpose. If you continue to use it for stormwater, then those of us who are gas ratepayers will be paying twice. I don't mind paying once for value. I mind paying twice. So I think those are all of my questions, and I appreciate hearing the support. I hope it's widespread support for a citizens' board. I think that would be a great contribution here. Thank you.
Laurel Woodworth.
Good evening. My name is Laurel Woodworth. I live in Albemarle County, actually, near Earliesville. And I come to you as someone who was an intern for Albemarle County a little while ago after college, and I went out and helped the staff inspect stormwater practices and stormwater infrastructure, and it was very eye-opening to see what happens at the end of a pipe when water flushes into the stream. There's a huge amount of erosion. And it really is an issue that is fairly invisible to most people, including me before I had that position. And there's three things I'd like to just mention in support of the stormwater utility fee. The city may be kind of weary of always being the pioneer when it comes to environmental initiatives, but I would like to say that you wouldn't be alone in the wilderness. In Virginia, there are 18 other counties and cities that have dedicated stormwater funds, and specifically close to us, there's the city of Stanton, which has about half of the population of Charlottesville. There's also the city of Lynchburg, which just passed a utility fee. And in the United States, there are 1,314 stormwater utility fees across the nation. That's in 39 states and Washington, D.C. And here's a map I'll share with you all. These are localities that have made the decision that maintaining stormwater infrastructure is important enough to have its own dedicated funding source. Secondly, the great majority of the land in the city is private land. And as I understand it, currently, with the use of the general fund, stormwater infrastructure improvements and also water quality improvements that are funded by the general fund can only be done on public land, city land. There is no current mechanism, as I understand it, for the private land to have improvements made on it. There's no specific incentive with the current general fund scheme. And I know that the city has also had to apply for a lot of grant funding in order to do these stormwater retrofits that one of the previous speakers referred to. So I think that creating this stormwater utility suddenly creates an awareness of the fact that each square foot of impervious cover, no matter whether it is on private or public land, does contribute to the problem, and it is an incentive for all property owners, including private property owners, to get their fee reduced. So at least, number one, it does produce some awareness. So I look forward to hopefully being in the same position with Albemarle County's Board of Supervisors in the next few years. Thank you.
John Falls.
Mr. Mayor, members of City Council, I pretty carefully followed Mrs. Ritterwald's arguments that the city must make major investments in its wastewater infrastructure. There's a full-page ad in the Sunday paper about that. I wholeheartedly agree with both. We must invest in our infrastructure. A number of speakers have said how we kicked the can down the road. It's going to bite us. But my real question is, has she convinced the city to make this a priority? I don't believe it is. Priorities are best signaled by financial commitment, not words. The city had an unexpected surplus of $3.8 million. How much of this was allocated to wastewater? We've had some interesting statistics about the general fund. Actually, last year, we collected $8,836,688 in stormwater sewer fees. The city transferred $700,270 to the general fund. That's what really happened. Does this indicate how we appreciate infrastructure maintenance? Ms. Quinn, the city regularly takes $3 million a year, a little bit more, out of our gas fees into the general fund. Our city does manage to fund its real priorities. For example, we raised $6.7 million to build the crossings. This came from various sources, including the city's capital investment program. We can do it if we want, if the city wants. Our city sets priorities for doing things for people. You always have. Fixing invisible infrastructure doesn't appear to be helping anybody, but it is. The city can signal that restoring our wastewater infrastructure has become a priority by devoting some portion of its general fund or capital investment fund to it. A well-known Christian and Kathy, you were talking about this, and I think it's very important. After all, a lot of the runoff comes from the roads. It sheets into my yard. And making a green city is not a homeowner problem. It's a city problem. The whole city should be involved in our infrastructure. Even if we take some money out of this general fund, it won't be enough. You've got to get more money. But I believe the city would respond, or the homeowners would respond far more positively if it was a specific fee for specific projects. This simply says we'll tax you for unspecified good green projects. Let me suggest that the city should propose specific actions they will take in the current year, such as the main sewer line along Market Street is deteriorated to a point it has to be replaced. And our engineers say it will cost X million dollars. Almost done. The homeowner's share will be. Then we know what we're paying for. We can see it. And it will automatically sunset. If our maintenance costs go down, so will the fees. It can be set yearly. It would be a fee for a specific set. We would understand then that the city has really made a commitment to maintaining our infrastructure, and I sure hope we do.
Thank you. Trey Stigman.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, my name is Trey Stegman. My business address is 102 South First Street here in the city. Here before you tonight, representing the Blue Ridge Apartment Council. You've previously received our position statement on this, but I wanted to appear before you tonight to enter comments for the public hearing. The Blue Ridge Apartment Council, if you and the public aren't already familiar, we're a 77-member organization of investment property owners in the greater Charlottesville and Albemarle County area. Vast majority of our membership actually are city property owners, and Crystal can probably confirm this, but we probably represent the single largest stakeholder in the city that would be impacted by the proposed utility fee. So first and foremost, if you do decide to implement a utility fee versus keeping it in the general fund or some other funding mechanism, we want you to know that we represent apartment owners, condominium owners, duplexes, townhouses, and houses throughout the city of Charlottesville. We support protecting and maintaining and improving the city of Charlottesville's stormwater infrastructure to ensure that the longevity of the systems and the greatly reduced pollution opportunities for the local waterways, streams, rivers, and the Chesapeake Bay. Our overreaching comment is that we recognize that rain falls on everyone, on all properties in the city. Therefore, we don't want any properties to be excluded from the funding mechanism, and we support all properties being part of that system. We support new program costs being funded by both bond sales, a bond mechanism, and a utility fee to keep the lowest possible rates being imposed on properties in the city. We furthermore really want to make sure that the general fund is continued to be tapped for basically a supplement of the program or the existing program costs. and we do wholeheartedly support some type of sunset provision, although I understand tonight that may be a little bit in flux as to a hard deadline. But essentially, we want to make sure that the program for specific new utility program does terminate at some future point. That is, this is not a perpetual utility fee in the city of Charlottesville. And last but certainly not least, we support the Oversight Committee and continuing to have an engaged group of folks that are comprised of a lot of different interests throughout the city. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. James Nix.
Good evening. My name is James Nix. I live at 2402 Cary Lane in the city of Charlottesville. Mayor Hooja, councilors, I'm here tonight to speak in support of the stormwater ordinance. I view this as both an environmental issue and a fairness issue. Now, with regard to the environment, four Charlottesville streams, as we heard earlier, are on the list of waterways in Virginia that fail to meet the state water quality standards. The city has a responsibility under state law and federal law to take steps to improve water quality in the urban streams and to reduce our impact on Chesapeake Bay. I've worked as a volunteer both for Streamwatch and for the Ravana River Basin Commission, and one of the things I learned from that work is that is the huge impact that runoff from impervious surfaces has on the quality of our the health of our streams. At Streamwatch in particular, I worked on a program designed to test the hypothesis that stream health was mainly driven by the number of cattle grazing in the watershed for a stream. Surprisingly, that study, which involved meticulous counting of cows in aerial photographs for months and months, what it concluded was that it was actually the area of impervious surface that had the major impact and not the cattle. Now, Charlottesville may have a few ornery goats, but no cattle. But what it does have is 37% of its area covered with impervious surfaces, you know, buildings, streets, parking lots, etc. To make matters worse, as we've also heard this evening, it has an aging stormwater management system, management infrastructure, in need of extensive repair and upgrade. Now, there is no way we can address these problems and reduce our impact on streams and the bay without additional revenue. And that brings up the issue of fairness. The proposed stormwater utility fee places most of the burden for dealing with the necessary improvements on property owners, but only in proportion to the contribution to their contribution to the problem. At present, our inadequate expenditures for stormwater infrastructure, financed from the general fund, but disposing of stormwater runoff from private property to me is analogous to disposing of trash from private property. The amount you pay should be related to how much of this material to be disposed of that you're generating. So the more area you have, rooftops, driveways, and parking lots, the more runoff you create, just like the more trash you create, you should pay more for it. So the proposal you have before you does just that, but it also encourages property owners to take advantage of many means available to reduce their environmental impact by reducing their runoff or treating the water on the property, and that provides an opportunity to reduce what they have to pay in stormwater fees. They can replace impervious pavement with porous surfaces, install rain gardens, and so forth. So with those two things in mind, both the environmental issues and the fairness issue, I strongly urge you to approve the creation of a stormwater utility for the city along the lines of the proposal you've received tonight, and that will greatly reduce our impact on local streams in the bay and do so in a manner that is fair to our residents. Thank you. And for once, I'm going to remember to take a cookie.
Vic Jones.
Mr. Mayor, members of City Council, Manager Jones, I was a member of the 2008 Advisory Committee. I was a member of this year's Advisory Committee. And I guess I want to say right off the bat that I think I agree with all of the comments I've heard tonight about the necessity to protect our wastewater systems and our water. We all know that, and I heard this on the committee since 2008, why the costs are rising, the Clean Water Act, the Virginia State Act, the MDL requirements. I don't think anybody disputes that this is all very important. When I was on the committee, I thought that Crystal and Jean and the staff did an awesome job, but I need to emphasize what I know I heard Jean say, and that the charge of our advisory committee was to look at the user fee, and that's pretty much what we did. We looked at the fee. And I support what the committee recommended in terms of if you decide that that's how you pay for all of these things that need to be done, then what we've recommended is what you would include in your program. Should have had the program 15 years ago. You know, nobody is disputing that. But I'm a taxpayer in the city. I don't live in the city. I'm also a member of the apartment council, and I, you know, support everything that Mr. Stegman said. But you know, as a taxpayer, I'm wondering about that $3.8 million surplus. And this isn't the first. It seems like every year you all have this debate. What should we do with all of this, you know, money? So to me, I think that I would, I mean, as a member of the advisory committee, as a taxpayer, I would say I would not support the establishment of a utility fee as a way to pay for the things that need to be done that you should have been doing for the last 15 or 20 years. There are lots of, you have a lot of surplus to be able to deal with, and you always seem to be able to. So love serving on the committee, learned a whole lot. No question that you need to do something. It's just a question of how you pay for it. Thank you.
Joanna Salidas.
Hello, I'm Joanna Salidas. I live at 129 Goodman Street in the city. I wholeheartedly support the proposed stormwater utility fee. Given that the city must raise significant funds to meet current and coming regulations, this fee is the best method because it is directly tied to the source of the problem, impervious surfaces. The current state of decay and disrepair of our stormwater infrastructure offers a tremendous opportunity to invest in Charlottesville in a way that will meet the needs of our citizens and businesses for a long time. While the current plan is to use some of the new funds for green infrastructure, like trees, rain gardens, and green roofs, to clean and reduce runoff, consistent leadership is required to ensure that we make the most of this opportunity. Essential details such as the credit system and incentives for developers are yet to be determined. Most importantly, the city must develop a dedicated process for ensuring that green infrastructure solutions are integrated holistically into planning decisions. I ask that you, as city councilors, use this and every opportunity to move green infrastructure from the back room to the table so that its cost and quality of life benefits can be enjoyed by our citizens. A 2012 study by American Rivers and others found that more than 44% of green infrastructure projects lowered costs and only 25% raised them. This study represents, though, a gross underestimate of the cost advantages of trees, for example, over pipes, because studies usually measure only one of the multiple benefits at a time. So this study looked at savings related to stormwater mitigation, but did not include a tree's financial contribution to property values, energy expenditures, or consumer spending, let alone harder to quantify quality of life issues such as climate moderation, wildlife habitat, crime reduction, or health. New York City expects to save $1.5 billion over the next 20 years by using green infrastructure. No wonder research by the U.S. Forest Service found that every dollar a city invests in trees returns $2.70 in benefits. Charlottesville has a beautiful green vision statement, lush green neighborhoods and all that, and a few people on staff working very hard for green infrastructure. But I believe we need serious leadership and more dedicated resources resources to make it a reality. The City of Vancouver, Washington, for example, actually allocates 100% of its stormwater utility fee to its Urban Forestry Department. We need a level of cooperation and communication between departments previously unnecessary because green infrastructure is distributed rather than centralized and multi-purpose rather than single purpose. It also requires more planning to ensure space to implement green infrastructure because it cannot just be buried under concrete. With appropriate planning and resources, however, green infrastructure will substantially contribute to the health, security, and prosperity of our community. The stormwater fee is a win-win. And I just have one quick untied in additional thing, which is one suggestion for the credit thing is I suggest the property owners who do not own cars or couples with one car receive credit for that as cars are a driving force in paving. Thank you.
Thank you. David Hirschman.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. I'm a city resident and the owner of 1,427 square feet of impervious cover. I have 3 points to make in support of the stormwater utility. One is about the permit, and as homework for this public hearing, I actually read this permit from the Virginia Town Hall, Victoria Town Hall. I don't recommend it for leisure reading, but it's quite illuminating in terms of the responsibilities that the city is under in terms of managing stormwater. And the permit is rigorous, it's getting more stringent, and it puts on the city's shoulders a responsibility to manage runoff, not just from new development and redevelopment, but also to reduce pollutant loads and runoff from the existing developed areas of the city, which is quite a task. Two, stormwater utility is a good tool. It's been known to be a good tool. I work for an organization called the Center for Watershed Protection, and we work with communities all over the country on the development of local stormwater management programs. And our observation is that communities that do not have a utility like this or a dedicated funding source of some sort are in the position of scrimping and scrapping to try to cobble together an adequate stormwater management program, and often they just don't have the resources to meet the needs, not just the regulatory needs, but also the needs of their residents and their communities. Communities that do have a dedicated funding source, such as a stormwater utility, are able to develop much more robust and resilient programs, and I think it's important to stress here when I say a robust program, it's not just about pipes, it's not just about repairing pipes. It's about healthy water. It's about kids and students and our interaction with water. It's about people in their neighborhoods and their interaction with water. And that's what I mean by a robust program. Three, this is a tool, stormwater utility, which is authorized by the General Assembly, meaning our legislature has authorized this tool for local government use somewhat uncharacteristically. As you may know, how many other facets of infrastructure or municipal operation do we have such a legislative authority to implement at the local level? And this is one of them. So because of this, it helps with the priority issue. The legislature has identified this back in the 1990s as an issue significant enough that they wanted to authorize local governments to have a tool such as this to fund stormwater management, either to supplement or even to replace allocations from the general fund. So one, the permit, it's stringent and it's real. Two, stormwater utility is a good tool for a robust program in healthy water. Three, it's a tool that's authorized by the General Assembly. And four, I noticed this plate of cookies up here and I don't think many people have taken one, and I'm wondering if it's some kind of test.
It is not a test. It's my acknowledgement that it's sometimes hard to come up and speak, and people sometimes need a little nourishment.
Thank you. Garnet Mellon.
I'm Garnet Mellon. He didn't take a cookie.
You can take two if you like.
Oh, thank you. I'll see what I can do with those two. As you all know, you have a lovely aging city, and you also have the Ravana River and several beautiful tributaries. This stormwater utility I'm in favor of. I'm trained as a landscape architect. I worked in environmental protection for about two decades. I'm the president of the Locust Grove Neighborhood Association. I live in the neighborhood, and I think this would be a very good idea. I've seen Crystal Ruderval and your staff work for years trying to get this before you. They've done a stellar job, and they've done a lot of good work. I hope that you pass it now. I want to tell you an illustrative story to tell you about stormwater and impervious surface. This utility service will address aging pipes and protection of the rivers, but will also protect people's properties. I live on a little property on Calhoun Street, and above me, and my house was built in 1940. In the 70s and 80s, because I checked with the previous owner, the basement never flooded. Above me, so when I moved into the house about 18 years ago, the basement floods once a year, once every 18 months. But as the time has gone on, it's flooding more and more. And then recently in the last snowstorm in January, there was the basement, in a very minor storm, the basement flooded. So I started looking around. Above me, just two properties up, I'm not that far off the ridge, there are two new driveways that have been built in the last 10 years and a small garage. Very small, but it's impervious surface and that rain does not go into the ground. Then below me, and there's no fault anywhere, it's just this. And then below me, the city just put in a beautiful sidewalk that fills in the ditch that used to be wet all the time, and it was apparently a storage water for the stormwater, for the water that infiltrated into the ground. So now I see that the impervious surface makes a huge difference, and my basement now has a lovely new sump pump, and I'm so thankful for my sump pump. But I do see that with the hard surfaces and the stormwater and your aging infrastructure, the stormwater in our area right across the street has been mucked with quite a bit because it's got a really low grade. So you've got a lot of problems to grapple with. I think the fee would really serve you well to be able to address these issues and be able to help properties not flood, keep the rivers clean, and keep the city lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Don't forget the cookies. Pat Lloyd.
Hello, Council. My name is Pat Lloyd. I live in the Ridge Street neighborhood. And I want to make it very clear that I'm very much in favor of all of us being responsible for our management of stormwater. That is not in question. My concern is how we raise the money. And I'm here to raise a small voice for our citizens of low income and fixed income who aren't here tonight, probably because they're working their second or third jobs. I have my utility bill in front of me, and it has a charge for gas, which I can pay and gladly pay. Well, maybe not gladly, but I pay it. Some of my neighbors have difficulty. I have a water charge. I can pay it. Some of my neighbors have difficulty. There's a sewer charge. I can pay it. Some of my neighbors have difficulty. There's also utility tax. I don't know what that is. I pay it. Some of my neighbors have difficulty. And I want council to remember that recently Governor McDonnell proposed to fund transportation with a state sales tax increase of from 5% to 5.8%, and also to increase car registration fees by $15. Now, some of this may not come to pass. I hope it doesn't. But please know that these changes will fall most heavily on lower-income families who, as a share of their income, spend more than high-income households on basic necessities. So if there is to be an increase, please provide some sort of relief for our low and fixed income citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. Ned Ormsby.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council members. My name is Ned Ormsby. I live at 500 Druid Avenue, directly on Pollock's Branch. But tonight, I'm speaking on behalf of the James River Green Building Council, the JRGBC. We're a locally based chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to create a positive impact on the region's built environment by accelerating the adoption of green building practices, technologies, policies, and standards in the Central Virginia region. I'm here tonight to support the passage of the stormwater utility fee for the following reasons. As a community, we will all be taxed for repairing the existing stormwater infrastructure. The proposed stormwater utility simply creates a more equitable equation based on a property's contribution to the degradation of the local watershed. Under the new proposed utility fee, property owners have the opportunity to reduce the amount they pay by retrofitting low-impact development, best management practices, LID BMPs, that offset the amount of stormwater entering the local watershed. The JRGBC encourages the city to set the amount of the credits for installing LID BMPs high enough so that property owners are incentivized to install LID BMPs. The JRGBC feels that money used to install stormwater management strategies would stay within the existing community, as the budget for many LID BMP projects are labor-heavy, which is not likely to be sourced from outside the community, and many projects use materials such as stone from local quarries. The quality of the local environment is one of the things that define Charlottesville, drawing both individuals and employers to the community. By improving our local environment, we're protecting our investment in the local community. Based on the points I've mentioned above, the James River Green Building Council strongly encourages the City Council to pass the proposed stormwater utility fee. Thank you for your thoughtful consideration of this important issue.
Thank you. Morgan Butler.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council, Mr. Jones. My name is Morgan Butler. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of the Southern Environmental Law Center, but also on my own behalf as a proud city resident and property owner. As I was going through my stormwater file yesterday to prepare my comments for tonight, I came across a set of the comments that I delivered to council almost 4 years ago to this evening, January 20th, 2009, on this very same topic. And as I was reading through those comments, I remembered just how disappointed I had been that after so much work by city staff and consultants and the public to come up with a fair, stable source of revenue to address one of the city's most pressing environmental problems, staff ended up recommending that we table this proposal 2 years in the staff report. And in our comments that night, we offered a number of reasons, a number of practical reasons why we thought delay was a bad idea. I'm here tonight to make some of those same points again because I think they're still relevant. First, we noted that a delay would mean incurring many of the same administrative costs again when this proposal was brought forward the second time. And sure enough, it appears that that has happened. City staff has been assigned to, along with the consultant who's been rehired, to look back at the program, to update the needs and the costs. In addition to that, the city's had to reconvene the advisory group and staff those meetings, and the city's engaged in a very extensive public involvement effort associated with the stormwater utility fee. Now, all of those things are absolutely indispensable, but that's why those costs had to be incurred again. And it's why, if we don't act on this program this time around, we'll be faced incurring those same expenses again further down the road. Second, we pointed out the advantage of acting while construction costs were at the lowest rates they had been in many years. And while construction costs have gone up in the 4 years since this was last on the table, they're still very likely lower now than they will be 2 years, 5 years, 10 years from now. So failing to act again means we're likely going to have to pay more in a few years to get the same results. Meanwhile, the expenses of our crumbling pipes continue to compound over time, so it costs the city more on both ends if we don't put this program in place this time around. Third and most important, we cautioned 4 years ago that if the city failed to adopt the program then, then it would lose credibility with the public regarding the depth of this problem and the pressing need to fix it. Both are very real, and I think both are captured well in a sentence on page 2 of the advisory group's new summary report. That sentence points out that with the capital investment the city has put into stormwater repair over the last 4 years, we've fixed approximately 12.5% of the pipes that are of immediate concern. Immediate concern. So 4 years, 12.5%. You carry the math forward, 8 years, 25%. Take 32 years to fix 100% of the pipes of immediate concern. We can do much better than that. This program is already long overdue, and every time council punts on the solution by saying, times are tough, there are other priorities, this can wait, we make it that much harder for the public to grasp the seriousness of this issue and to properly prioritize it. So in sum, staff has developed an equitable way for the city to generate a stable source of revenue to address a serious environmental problem and plug a growing fiscal hole. And unlike 4 years ago, staff isn't recommending delay this time around. We can't afford more delay. Please support the stormwater utility fee, and thank you for the chance to comment.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak who did not sign up?
Mayor Hooja, council people, Mr. Jones. I fully support the stormwater fee. My name is Bill Emery. I'm a resident of 1604 East Market in Charlottesville, Virginia. Yeah, I just hear a lot of talking about repairing pipes. And pipes are sort of an older form of engineering. And I hope, I know that we've got a whole section in our Muni Code, I guess it's chapter 10, and we're under, the aegis of DCR and the Virginia Stormwater Management Handbook. But I hope what we'll do, as Ms. Salidas was talking about, that we'll do some distributed attempts to actually get the stormwater to infiltrate where it is, as opposed to repairing essentially this conveyance technology, which is part of the problem. And also along those same lines, I hope that we will repair some of our standards in the design manual in the city, which requires such wide boulevards and curb and gutter. I guess you guys saw that picture I sent you with the curb and gutter, washing a car away that was parked there. The technology exists. They're ventilated curbs. You can capture and try to infiltrate where you are. I saw water running off a city street, Carlton Avenue, running into Habitat's new development over in Sunrise and disappearing through their pervious pavement. Now, maybe it just runs into a sewer or a stormwater system. But I hope in advance of this next second reading, possibly you could get out a little educational material to the public to let them know where this current MS4 system, where the pipe's empty, I have no idea. And what are the options where we could have a more localized treatment of stormwater to get it to infiltrate back into our water table? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is anyone else who'd like to speak?
Brandon Collins, 418 Fairway Avenue. I'm intrigued and very glad to hear so many people who are so excited about doing something very meaningful to confront the ecological crisis that we face. And, of course, we need to do a whole lot more than deal with our stormwater problem, but this is a good first step. I do have the sneaking suspicion that you've got so many people here who, we all want to do things that are good by the environment. And I think you get a lot of people here because they feel like they're not getting bilked out of the deal and that it's somehow equitable. But from what I'm hearing, I don't see this as a necessarily equitable deal for a lot of people, particularly low-income, low-wealth people in our community. And I wonder if there are other ways to find other credits that are involved with this, because I do like the idea of a dedicated funding source. It's very different from the real estate tax in that you may actually have a chance to grant some waivers to low-income people, to elderly people, people with disabilities. Those things that you're allowed to grant waivers on the real estate tax, you can maybe up that for other types of low-income people and low-wealth people in our community. I would submit that it's low-wealth people in the community who are the least likely to be able to come up with the funding to build a green roof or to do other things that could make things so that they can get a credit and get some of this fee waived. So I would love to see some subsidies for low-wealth people in our community to be able to make those kinds of changes. That otherwise, nothing's going to happen. We've got a lot of poor people. We have an affordable housing crisis here. We put way too much emphasis on home ownership, but the few low-income people who do own homes here are in danger of losing those homes if you keep adding fees, and you're not going to address the stormwater problem. You're just going to make people poor. So including that is key. The other thing I would say is that there are businesses and developers. You have to be very wary of those folks and how they're going to get the waivers, how they're going to get the credits for that. And I think they should be paying more. I think that's equitable. They are much bigger cause to environmental degradation than the rest of us, and they should be carrying a heavy burden on this. And the other thing is when we look at housing, the Blue Ridge Apartment Group, granting them waivers, they're going to pay what they have. They're going to get away with not building a green roof or getting rid of the impervious surfaces. What they're going to do is raise rents on people, and so finding a way to deal with that would be key, because otherwise, you're not actually making anything better. You're getting a little bit more money, and you're actually getting it off the backs of poor folks who are renting. So a cap on rent or making it so that that kind of thing cannot happen or requiring these people and particularly developers to build within a certain standard rather than just paying off the money and getting away with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else would like to speak?
John Hayden, Westwood Road. I would recommend everyone should go to charlottesville.org/GIS and look up your property address to see your proposed fee. I'm confused by this billing estimates. From what I thought I understood, you're talking about a $36 per year fee. However, if you look at your fee, proposed fee in that GIS document, mine says it is between $72 and $144 a year, which is not $325 a month, but $12 a month. So there, at least for me, there's an awful lot of confusion about the billing unit, how many you're going to have to pay, what this fee is this $144 per billing unit? There's an awful lot of confusion about that, at least in my mind. And how do we qualify for exemptions if we institute rainwater collection on the site? And what about the rain barrel program that the city had? There's a lot of questions that I think we need to get answered before we start having to pay some fee that I'm still not sure what it is.
Thank you, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Naomi Roberts, 1140 St. Clair Avenue Extended. I have one question. The city is going to be exempt. What about the runoff? What about the runoff of city water from storms onto property? There were three houses that was built on Locust Lane, and the contractor did not pay any attention to where the water was running. And so the city just paid $35,000 for a neighbor of mine because of city run, city storm runoff from Locust Lane, from St. Clair down Locust Lane and Locust Avenue. So what is the city going to do about the runoff on people's property? I'd like to know what the answer is to that. And you're going to charge us a fee, and that's fine. Where I live, I don't have a paved driveway. My house is on level ground, and I'm going to be charged a fee. I think it should be equitable, and homes should be looked at, and not just set a fee for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else?
Mayor Hoosier, my name is Charles Weber. Again, I live at 601 Locust Avenue. I didn't prepare any remarks for this. I actually wanted to wait and hear what everybody else had to say, and I can tell you that I'll be very brief and say that I don't think I heard a comment from anyone here tonight that I would disagree with. I mean, you know, I'm as much as anyone enjoy going out into the wilderness with my grandchildren and preserving that for their children and their grandchildren. So, I mean, in terms of doing the right thing, I think we're at least touching on the right topic here. But having said that, let me just point out one thing that I noticed that was kind of missing from all of this discussion, and maybe it's buried in the technical aspects of the program somewhere, but it's not obvious. The EPA Stormwater Phase 2 final rule, which is what this is all based on, says the whole purpose of it is to reduce the quantity of pollutants that stormwaters pick up and carry into the stormwater system. So my question is there some measure that we have at the end of the day that we are, in fact, reducing pollutants, not just, you know, doing a lot of fluff with our stormwater to make it look like we're being green or calling ourselves environmentally friendly? I want to see some measure of effectiveness here so that when we put this extra tax money burden on the taxpayer, we can point something, put it online or something, and say this is what we're achieving with it. So please take a look at that. Make sure that we have some measure of effectiveness so we know what the pollution is now and what it is later after we implement some of these things. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else would like to speak? Yes.
Good evening, all. My name is Angus Murdoch. I'm a Fluvanna County resident of Columbia District, where the plume from Charlottesville and all other points upstream joins the James River. And if you ever see that after a few rainy days, it's pretty dramatic. Obviously, that pollution comes from a wide variety of sources, but I should also say I'm a board member of the Rivanna Conservation Society, have been for many years, and have been involved in stream watch and various water monitoring activities, most recently an effort to kind of ramp up the bacterial monitoring. But it's very clear that a lot of bacteria, a lot of sediment is coming out of the urban streams, meadow and moors, creeks in particular. I don't think that's any surprise to anyone here, but it has impressed on me just the last few months, a little bit I've done, just that even these small local rains, especially in the summer, when there are going to be a lot of recreational users most of the time downstream, these small local intense storms can have a big impact on points downstream. So I'm very glad to hear that of the progress that's happened thus far. I want to give my sincere thanks to Ms. Ritterwald and everyone else who's helped keep this ball rolling rather than kicking the can to resurface in Palmyra. I also would urge the city and the other localities who are partners in the Streamwatch organization and RWSA in particular to keep funding this local monitoring initiative, and you know, so that we can have a robust local capacity to see if any of the stuff we're proposing to do actually works. This is going to take a long time, and we need to have the capacity to do the work and see whether it's working. Thank you very much.
Anybody else would like to speak?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Councilors. Thank you for hearing me tonight. I'm Charlie Armstrong. I'm here as the president of the Blue Ridge Home Builders Association. We're a not-for-profit organization consisting of 150 local member businesses. I'm also a city taxpayer. I represent Southern Development, a local builder and developer, and I hold a degree in environmental science. I'm an ecologist. Blue Ridge Home Builders Association supports the proposed stormwater fee. The idea of a utility fee we feel is a more equitable solution than adding it to the general fund and making it an extra few cents on the tax rate. But there's something that would dramatically improve it. It's already been mentioned by Mr. Emery and Mr. Ormsby in particular, and maybe others. As proposed, the 40% credit that is part of the proposed fee structure for those who treat their own stormwater is inadequate. Our policy as a city should be to heavily incentivize those landowners who treat their own stormwater. That's really how you get effective stormwater treatment, is as close to the source as possible. A larger credit would do that, and I would suggest up to 80% credit for those who fully treat quantity and quality their own stormwater. The Homebuilders Association recently sent council a letter with most of these remarks in it, and I forwarded that letter on to some business people in town, and one of them immediately wrote back to me, the owner of one of the largest shopping centers in town with one of the largest parking lots, and said that a larger fee, as we suggested, would in fact probably incentivize him as the owner of one of the largest impervious surfaces in town to retrofit his parking lot to capture that stormwater on his site and treat it on site. You know, maybe some of out of the goodness of his heart, but really it's economics. If he's saving on fee, treating stormwater on site, his costs go down over the long term for probably a large short-term expenditure, but it can be recaptured. So if the credit were increased, I think it's easy to say that other large impervious landowners would probably be incentivized to do the same, retail and others. Think of it this way. If everyone treated their own stormwater at the source, on their property where it fell, on the roofs, on the parking lots, on the driveways, we wouldn't be here to have this conversation at all. It really wouldn't be necessary. So we encourage you to increase the credit to perhaps 80% so that private landowners will have a large incentive to mitigate their own impacts at the source or as close to the source as possible. That's how you get real water quality improvements in Charlottesville. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Yes, please.
Good evening. I'm Jim Moore. I live on Hazel Street. I'm a architecturally trained real estate developer. Got my architecture degree here at UVA. I've been a resident of Charlottesville or the area for just over 50 years. And I am not an employee of the government, and nor do I make any financial gain from nonprofits that receive their support from the government. I'm basically a businessman, and I'm kind of feeling a little bit like Homer Simpson when he printed up his business card saying local man. I don't feel that there's been enough time waiting for the booze to evaluate the answers that have been provided by staff to the questions that were posed to staff. I haven't seen any of really the answers publicized, and there's not enough time tonight for me to tell you a long list of the issues that I see. I mean, basically, I support this concept, but I feel like you're doing the same thing we've done for 50 years, and that is it's really just a halfway solution. Now, about 8 years ago, it was our carbon footprint, and that was critical, and that had to be the important thing. And we formed committees, and we worked on things, and hired people, and did all this stuff. But to date, to the best of my knowledge, we don't know what our carbon footprint is. We haven't even added it up, much less measured how much we've reduced it. So the bay is really critical, and yet how good will that be if we put all our resources there and you know, the water's 10 degrees hotter. You know, our community consists financially of limited resources, and there's not enough for everyone to get as much of everything that they want. And I think you're cheating yourself by evaluating this off budget as if it has its own set of priorities. And I think you're somewhat cheating yourself by funding this separate as if it has its own set of priorities. There are people in this town that are suffering, and their situations are also important. And I see it as your job, which isn't an easy one, is to prioritize those things. Now, I don't work for government, but I did in the 80s. I worked for this government. And I can still remember the jokes we had when a summer intern did a study of our stormwater system. And we knew what was going to happen to that study. And, you know, there's not enough in here. Okay. The biggest offender here is the city. You don't really know how much impervious surface you have because you've excluded your streets. It's somewhere between 27,000 and 75,000 square feet. It makes everything else almost unimportant. But you're not going to look at that, and you have nothing to incentivize yourselves to guard that when you're looking at the spec over here. I spent 4 years on a dialogue on a race. And the primary offenders of the race are the educational systems and the legislative or the administrative systems in the government. But when we do the race commission, we say initially at least they said we'll excuse that. I'll just get as many as I can out here. There's completely unanswered questions. Well, I'm at least going to take the 20 extra seconds that you gave the others.
Okay. You already had it.
The billing unit thing is unnecessarily complex. You shouldn't be charging someone that has 300 square foot the same that has 1,000 square feet. You're going to cost $250,000 a year just to administer this. You've chosen the most expensive way, and yet it doesn't match up really with the true thing, which is not necessarily water but pollution. And the basis for all of this, you haven't told us what phase three is. You say it's a 20-year project, but you won't tell us how much that cost. You're just showing us phase one.
Thank you.
I have other things, but we don't have time for that.
You can email us.
Anybody else would like to speak?
Would all those in favor of the stormwater fee please remain seated? All right. It'll be interesting in a couple of years to see how the revenue from this breaks down as far as green revenue versus gray revenue. And it would take someone just freshly coming out of a coma to see where this is all really headed. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else would like to speak today? If not, public hearing is closed. There is time for City Council to make comments if you would like to make and discuss. And it would be helpful if you can just go through one at a time and get a chance to do that at one time. This time is getting late, and it will be helpful. And we have second reading also. Who wants to start?
I'll start because I think I'm okay. Short. I mean, not
okay.
Specifically.
No problem.
One thing that I have brought up since this first came to us as counselors and in discussing with staff and then also in front of council was the need for some sort of offset for low-income homeowners, because I think we do, you know, affordable housing is something that we're really committed to as a council, and I think we really need to pay attention to that. What I have come to accept on faith, and I think with good reason, is that it can't be written into this ordinance by law. But I am committed to, and I think that as council, we need to be committed to making sure that we do create either a fund or a policy or whatever that is to make sure that we have the same sort of protection for the folks who pay this fee as we do for folks who pay property tax, and to make sure that we're not penalizing people who've managed to hold on to their homes during the recession. So I just wanted to clarify that. Also, the sunset provision comes up periodically, and it is one reason why I really support the addition of adding the advisory committee to this, because I think that we can't at this point say, you know, we're only going to need this for a certain amount of time. We don't know what new regulations might come down the pike. We don't know what, you know, everything that we'll find as we start this project of maintenance and construction. But I think that it's really important that somebody is paying attention to that, and that that be part of their commission, is to say, you know, it is, if at a certain point we're collecting this money and it's not going toward necessary improvements, we need to start talking about taking it out. And the other piece that I think is really important is we've talked about the various ways of using part of city funding and part of, you know, or doing it entirely from the fee. And I started out this conversation thinking we should do it all from the fee, because I think that especially when we talk about incentives like raising the offsets that one could have to more than 40%, you would almost have to be doing it with more of it coming from the fee than from general fund, because we can't subtract from the general fund what gets offset. But I have come to think that I would support the mix of having some of it come from general fund and some of it coming from the fee with the bonding as part of that. To me, that seems the least painful, but not in a bad way. I think it also reflects the fact that we do have city streets and city properties that do contribute to the problem, and that should be paid by the city, which is of course paid by you, the taxpayer. So, my first impulse was to say no, because then some property owners aren't participating in it, and they also use our streets. But I have come to a point where I think I believe that that's probably the majority view on council, and I'm not going to block that.
Sure. I am in strong support of the advisory committee, and I brought it up last night, and I think it is really important that we track this, monitor this, and keep the public informed. I agree with Ms. Zekos. We need to figure out some way of creating a mechanism to provide an offset to those people who are finding it difficult to pay for these improvements. I'm thinking of the LEAP program. Could we create something that is an equivalent, that also, just as with that, we were getting people to retrofit their houses, this is like retrofitting their properties, and providing assistance and consulting to people who can't afford it. I was leaning towards this, and I do believe now that I do want to have a blend of the general fund with the utility fee. I am curious just to find out how much of our city is street. With the GIS, I think we should be able to calculate that pretty quickly, just to give us some number that goes with that contribution from the general fund. But I want to emphasize, I think the utility fee is very important for the very reason that it is a dedicated source, and it's very transparent. It's very predictable. And some of the comments that have been made against the utility have actually referenced occasions where we have, you know, in the past had trash collection and then we privatized it, with the reason being that we wanted to save money, and yet those savings were never returned back to the citizen. I mean, this is an opportunity to be extremely transparent. People will know exactly where that money is coming from and where it's going. So the dedicated piece is important. And finally, the timeliness is really important. The Place Design Task Force has been charged with writing an RFP and to assist
Request
our neighborhood.
For proposals.
The Place Design Task Force's Placemaking, Livability, and Community Engagement Design Task Force, but it's working with particularly the Planning Department, Neighborhood Services, to improve the coordination and improve our documents so that we wind up creating environments that truly are in keeping with our stated goals in the comp plan. We state we want to be a walkable community and sustainable. We want to be green, and yet when literally the rubber hits the road, we don't have the mechanisms in place to coordinate it and do it well. And we have been assisting staff to write this RFP, and we're running into the problems of the stormwater infrastructure. We don't have anything in place to make that really happen in accordance with best practices. And we're trying to implement using the tree commission recommendations for better street trees. Again, this we don't have the culture and the resources and the expertise currently, quite honestly, to do these things. And so this is very timely to have the ability to create a master plan to deal with stormwater in a very comprehensive way, and would quite possibly let us get to the point where we could anticipate where we might find shared facilities that the city could invest in like we invest in our parks, which then could be used, and we'd have to figure out a way to create credits then for private owners that are benefiting from that. Maybe they contribute a fund into that. But I do see it as very much a way to incentivize the redevelopment of our corridors, which, if most of you realize, are mainly Grayfield sites. Most of them are 40 acres of parking lot on Preston Avenue. So I think this could really get us to the point where we're finally doing a lot of what we aspire to in our comprehensive plan.
Yes, and I'm really supportive of the utility fee. I prefer the idea of having the whole $2.5 million come from a dedicated fee because it's a dedicated source. And commensurate with that to reduce the real estate rate for that part of the general fund that we have historically used for this stormwater fee. But I'm not wedded to that. I think there are issues of fair and equitable. I just think they're sort of having a dedicated revenue source that's all that we know that is the only purpose for it is for the stormwater. It's da 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 da. And I really, really appreciate that these numbers have been calculated without a contribution from the gas fund, which is the least fair and equitable thing we could do. So I really appreciate that. But I being very concerned about the impact on our low-income households, which are the majority, quite frankly, if you look at the size of our houses in this city, the assessments, most of them are really quite smaller. Under, as you can see, the average billing unit is 2, which means the average billing unit is less than 2. And I would really like to know what the impact on the rate would be is if we imposed the fee on it, the actual impervious surface. Because if you look at the difference between 1 billing unit and 2 billing units, under the current ordinance, we're talking $35 to $70 if you go just over the 1 billing unit. And I actually took the liberty of looking at the data and looking at all of our residential households by assessment, by impervious surface, by neighborhood, and that way of assessing a fee would have an impact to lower the rate on our lowest assessed houses for a lot of people, for thousands of households. So I would like to look at that. When you look at the totals, it looks to be about a 10% difference, which quite frankly I don't think is very much and would offset. I think that's the fairest thing we could do for low income is that one change in this ordinance. That said, the other issue that I'm very interested in, and my God, if you don't think this is an amazing city, anybody should listen to this public hearing. The people in this city, the expertise, the resources, the credits. I loved the discussion about credits. Very interesting discussions. I think we could look at a higher credit, more than 40%, if we go with the general fund fee combination. If you're only looking on the fee, I think the general fund, the idea of using general fund monies is that public, the support of public infrastructure, and we all have to contribute to that. But if the fee then is only really about your own household, then I think we could look at greater credits for that. I think it's important to look at credits and how much we can maximize them, because that is the incentive. That too goes to the billing units. If we use actual billing units, it gives a greater percentage on the small for the smaller residential homes to retrofit. Because quite frankly, if you're 1,200 square feet and you're being billed for 2,000, or if you're 1,500 square feet and you're being billed for 2,000, it's going to be hard to make up for that 500 to get below one. But if anything you do will get you some credit, that would be a greater incentive. But anyway, I'm also interested in knowing what the actual impervious surface that is not going to have a fee imposed is, because right now the general fund is about 30%. The contribution would be about 30% of the whole. And it would be nice to know if that approximates our public obligation. That's all I'll say for now.
Mr. Lewis?
First, I want to thank and congratulate Ms. Riddlewald once again for all the hard work that you and your team put into this proposal. It really is remarkable, your perseverance and thoroughness and professionalism, and I really applaud you for that, even though I'm not going to end up voting for it. But I do think you've done excellent work, so thank you. I know you've put in a lot of extra hours in this thing. First thing I want to say about the proposal itself is there's a lot of word games going around about, is this a fee, is this a tax? Let's just be honest. I mean, if you think about the difference between a fee and a tax, typically, and I'm going to oversimplify here, but a fee is a charge you pay for a service that you, it's a user fee, if you will, for a service that you utilize. In the case of a utility fee, utility bill, somebody mentioned that this is just like a water bill. Well, it's not. It's very different from a water bill. If you don't want to utilize water service, you can turn the water off to your house. If you don't want to pay for gas service, you can turn the gas off to your house. If you don't want to utilize, if you don't want to have to pay an electricity bill, you turn the electric power off at your house. Nobody can stop the rain from falling on your house. Okay? So this is an involuntary fee, in other words, a tax. And I think we need to call it for what it is. It is a tax. It is the largest tax increase in many, many, many years in the city of Charlottesville. And I think Mr. Moore, is he still here? Jim Moore? I don't often agree with Mr. Moore, but he made an excellent point, which is the reason why we're able to sort of proceed with this is because it is off budget. We're not paying for it out of general tax dollars. If we were having this discussion about a $1.6 million or $2 million or more increase in our general fund, we'd be having a much different discussion. But because it's off budget, it has its own revenue source, it's easier for us to swallow. I am very concerned about, from a process standpoint, that, as Mr. Jones said, that there weren't other alternatives considered. Even if we all agree that this $1.6 million or $2 million is the magic number, that there weren't other options considered by the advisory committee this time around for covering those costs, to include finding those monies elsewhere in our budget, to include other sources of revenue. I'm not convinced that $1.6 million is the magic number, but let's say it is. I'd like to have seen more thought put into other options for generating that much revenue for stormwater improvements. This gets down to the most fundamental concern I have with this whole proposal. This whole new tax has to do with priorities. I have never denied that improving our stormwater infrastructure is a priority. It's an important priority for our community. Back in 2008, when Julian Taliaferro and I were on council, we significantly increased funding in our budget for stormwater improvements. We have been able to do more. I'd like to see us continue in that vein. We're talking about something really remarkable here tonight, which is a dramatic increase in funding for stormwater improvements to the tune of $1.6 million a year, which means we'd be spending significantly more money every year on improving stormwater than we would be on upgrading our schools, on building sidewalks, trails, and bike lanes, on redeveloping public housing, on acquiring green space, on building affordable housing, on historic preservation, youth tutoring, youth mentoring, early childhood education, economic development, job creation, small business development, recycling, water conservation, reducing homelessness, community policing, transit improvements, reentry for ex-felons, energy efficiency, energy conservation, reducing health disparities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are all very important priorities for the city, and yet here tonight we're about to leapfrog that rather significantly with a huge new investment of funding that we're pulling out of our taxpayers' pockets. Again, I think it is a priority to continue to increase our investment in our stormwater infrastructure. I'm just not convinced that that priority outweighs all of these other needs that we have as a community. And then the last thing I'll say is I am very concerned about the cost impacts. I think it's safe to say that most of the people that are involved in crafting this proposal, most of the people here tonight who advocated for it, can pretty comfortably absorb the increased cost. But there are, as we've heard from other councilors and from a couple of speakers, there are many property owners in the city for whom this will be a burden. Fixed income homeowners, elderly, moderate income homeowners, certainly a lot of the churches and the nonprofits in our community, the housing authority, et cetera, who are going to be hit with significant bills. And it will be putting our city businesses at a competitive disadvantage to county businesses, because it will be, in some cases, significantly increasing the cost of doing business in the city of Charlottesville. So for all of those reasons, even though I support the sort of underlying goal of increasing investment in stormwater, I can't support this particular proposal.
Thank you. We've been talking about stormwater utility for at least 20 years, to my recollection. And I'm glad that there is a proposal now in front of us to do something with it. I think the system which has been proposed is a fair system. It will be effective. It will provide dedicated funding for an important need in our community. And I remember talking about this in my campaign 2 years back, in discussion of infrastructure improvement. But it also allows for infrastructure improvement, not just in parks, but also national green infrastructure, which is, as Bill Emery mentioned in the discussion. And this is something which we must do. No time is good time, but at least something which can be done right now, I would like to see happen. The number of concerns I have, last meeting, as I was discussing, that there were my concerns were financing issues, and we never got to discuss them, so I'm going to bring them up today as we did not have a work session. Besides, before that, I get that far, I'd like to also mention that I also share other counselors' concern for low-income families, that there ought to be some proposal for helping them in this fee or a tax, and I would like to see the staff develop some idea before the next reading, so at least get some idea of what it can be done. I'm also for supportive of larger credit, at least 51%, so there is some incentive for business property owner to more than 50%, so that they can take care of the drainage on their own site. Especially the quality of water is important, not only just quantity of water. I also support the idea of an oversight committee, and I'm not sure if there is a sunset in this, because water drainage issues are going to be with us for a while. It may be reduced, but not, I don't think it will go away. I also am intrigued by Ms. Smith's idea that unit of measure not be 1,000, but exact area itself. And that is something may be more complicated, but it may be more equitable and fair to people. And we have a GIS system which we should be able to measure what it is. On the financial side, I also first thought that I will support a complete independent fund for 100%. But I think I'm leaning more and more towards mixed, some general fund and some fee, and that I think will be more equitable in my mind. Last item, which may not please some people, is that I think because you're raising approximately $1.6 million fee, I would suggest that we have to cut at least 3 cents in our tax rate for property owners, property tax, to balance it by what approximately $1.6 million. That way you will have a dedicated fee. You'll have the money will be there, but people will not be paying more taxes, as Mr. Norris said. And I'm at least aware of three people on this table who have some interest in reducing real estate fee, real estate tax, as a result of this proposal.
I'll say I'm not one of them. I think that, for me, if we were doing the whole thing from the fee and not using taxpayer money, I would say that we should definitely think about lowering the tax to offset the amount that we're no longer having to pay out of our taxes. But I think that Mr. Norris very eloquently listed all of the other commitments and priorities that we have as a city council, the other needs that we have in our city, and to tie our hands to not be able to spend the amount of money that we have now on those things seems like something I would be very not happy about doing. I'm not being terribly articulate because I'm a little startled by that, because one of the things that we've heard quite a lot is that in the past several years, as property taxes or property values have dropped in the city, and in the most recent report from the assessor, every single neighborhood has had its property values lowered this for the coming year. That when property values were rising, the city council wisely cut property tax rates so that people, as their property values rose, wouldn't have astronomical property tax bills, and that, you know, to kind of keep an even amount of money. As those property values have dropped, it's a lot harder to raise people's property taxes. If we had followed the same logic, we would have raised our property taxes by now, because we've had a loss in revenue from property taxes. I think that we've all recognized on council that just as the city has been suffering from recession, so have our residents, and we've been very reluctant to do that, and I support that we've not raised those rates at this point. But I think that to actually lower them would be very counterproductive, and we would find ourselves nickel and diming not only our schools, but our housing fund. We would find ourselves nickel and diming all sorts of social services that we provide, and I think that that's an irresponsible direction for us to go at this point.
You'll have exactly the same money as you have now if you reduce 3 cents and charge the fee.
No, we would have that only if we funded this whole thing from the fee. If we just add new expenses from the fee, then we have the same amount in tax money.
Well, that's what he's saying.
Yeah. What I said was that if you do part from the general fund, part from the fee, and reduce 3 cents, you'll have exactly the same amount of money as you have now, except that you'll be putting it on more on drainage than on other things.
No. Actually, yes. By the part that's being paid for out of current property tax funds would be the part that we're already doing. All new expenses would come from the fee, which we're not paying now. So you would be adding $1.6 million in new commitments from property tax and then cutting our ability to pay them.
We're getting this, I don't know what is math, but I'm a fairly good idea of math. You'd be getting $1.6 million from fees, and you'd be cutting $1.6 million from the 3 cent tax.
And paying $1.6 million more for stormwater utilities than we are now.
Right, so
you need to be cutting $1.6 million of other programs that we can be doing with our.
You need to get all $2.5 million from the fee if you're going to cut the real estate tax.
So I just say I wouldn't.
And I would just like to add that this is also reflective of the fact that we never did get back to talking amongst ourselves about a strategic approach to handling our priorities and tying that to the budget. I think that is still going to be an incredibly important step for us to take. We're going to be entering into our budgets work sessions this week. We, back in September, in our retreat in Stanton, we had listed all these priorities, and we never once identified which ones we were going to get let go. And so before we start talking about cutting taxes, I really do want us to get to the point where we start looking at our priorities, our budget, and then look at both ways that we are going to be able to cut expenses, but also tally that up with all the different ways that we're going to raise revenue. There are a lot of priorities out there. We need to look at it comprehensively and tie it to the budget, every aspect of the budget. This particular fee is dealing with a piece of infrastructure that is, again, a fundamental responsibility of government. It is essential that we deal with it. It is essential that we do it in a manner that redounds back to benefit our environment. I can't hamstring that fundamental responsibility to a bigger discussion about reducing taxes. I might very well be at that point if we have this bigger discussion about putting all our priorities out there, figuring out all the different ways we're going to cut costs, how we're going to raise revenues, and then what comes first, what comes next. But this is something that's really hitting us right now.
Our budget reflects our priorities.
Can I ask Crystal to answer a question that actually I got a couple times, which is about how, and I happen to know that the first, you just sort of did the first wave of assessment of impervious surface in terms of square footage, but should we adopt this, there will be a more fine-tuned calculation of individual impervious surface?
At this moment in time, the impervious data layer comes from the 2009 aerial photography that was digitized and went through a careful sort of quality assurance process. 2009, since then, there have been many properties where there have been expansions, reductions, changes in that fee. To a large extent, that's been maintained. At this point, there's expected to be another flyover in 2013, early in this year. That data would be delivered to the city this summer, and we would have the opportunity to digitize that most current snapshot in time. And clearly, any bills generated would come from as accurate as possible data that we can establish. The ordinance contemplates an appeals process, and that certainly recognizes that, you know, when you first start something like this on, there may be corrections that are absolutely appropriate to make, and those would be built into the system going forward.
Right. So, thank you, because it was actually the appeals process that I was interested in. And we saw an image of a GIS snapshot with the polygon on it over the impervious surface. And in reading the appeals process, I know a couple of us had some concerns about how arduous it was for and really put the onus on the landowner immediately. And I wondered if anybody who questions their calculation could first of all get their snapshot, their GIS. This is how we got it.
Yep.
Be able to appeal to the director. We referenced a director to try to sort of work out really whether or not it's correct, and then go to the onus on the landowner if they really want to, you know.
Sure. I think it's important for folks to recognize that the tool that's currently available on the GIS viewer was a tool to try to really facilitate the transparency of this process.
Right.
It had a range that buffers the two rates that council is currently considering. If council chooses to proceed with this, that tool could certainly be refined to reflect the correct rate, and as this revised or updated correct data layer is available, it would be available through that viewer. So property owners can use that tool to see the same data that we could get them in a picture. We could certainly get to them in a picture. And I think one of the responses we provided is that, in fact, there's the opportunity for the director to waive those sort of more stringent requirements associated with the appeals process if there's an obvious error or there's a clear indication that, something got missed, let's fix it, because the intention is for this to be based on accurate information. And I would submit that in the first round of billing, those waivers will be generously granted because we don't want to make this difficult if there's something that's incorrect.
Well, I was also thinking that, actually, is that I think we need to anticipate in that first year that there would be a lot of appeals because we can't see in GIS when someone's water's being diverted to the willow tree.
And along these lines, though, as was presented earlier, communities that use an estimated amount, an equivalent residential unit, they're already dealing with a much sort of vaguer, broader approach. Our approach of going to a 1,000-square-foot billing unit already dials that detail down. The further you go down, the more appeals or the more sort of inaccuracies might spring up, and that is, you know, it's a cost of the process. So if you're arguing about 1 square foot or 3 square foot or 10 square feet, it may not ever even affect the rate or the bill. So the rate wouldn't change, but the number of billing units might change.
Right. And I think we can certainly talk about what that unit of rounding could be. If rounding is particularly in other communities, you're going into a hornet's nest here with actuals. The rounding can be smaller. In fact, the task force, I think, recommended a half billing unit to round to. I still think that's too big because of the sheer number of houses we have that are in that small range. Again, you know, just the impact on those small houses, which are, when they're, you know, one assumes is correlated somewhat with income.
Case in point,
I don't know what we're last
question. Case in point is when gentleman Mr. Berry mentioned that his waters that are going into the plants and trees, and how would that be taken care of by appeal?
We've had a number of similar comments or inquiries by residents who have made the statement that all the stormwater stays on their property and therefore they should have some reduction or elimination of their fee. And that's an issue that we've talked through in the team, and I'd like, if you don't mind, have Gene answer the question.
Sure. Yeah, I think this is a general foundational question that in stormwater utility law using impervious area. So if you decide to use impervious on a property, it's somewhat irrelevant once you've done drainage improvements to that property. Okay, so you have a pre-developed property out there, it's 68,000 square feet, and there's no improvements on it. That's the pre-developed condition that you expect now your regulations to do. Once you stop putting anything on that house, the driveway, you've now changed the drainage pattern on the property, and you can't assimilate the same amount of water as you could before. It's just it's basic science, right? So if you could hold a one-year storm on your site before, and now you're taking away some of the drainage impervious infiltration area, that water has to go on top of the other part of your community, your other non-developed property, and the assimilative value changes. So what we're saying is when you use impervious area, and you've put that development on your property, you've changed the drainage pattern on your property, and it's cumulative. We're not looking at individual properties that's going into his stream or he's feeding a tree from that, but the cumulative property of that couple of thousand square feet of his house adds to the runoff of the property. You run off sooner, your peak changes, the volume changes. So the basic, and I can get you lots of scientific papers, you want to spend the time to read this, but the basic premise is once you've developed and that impervious is on there, that's what we're charging you for. That sets off, for example, the Chesapeake Bay TMDL is based on the impervious every square foot of impervious in the entire community. It doesn't make a difference about how that's being managed on a site. At what point does it run off? At what point does the city have to then pick up responsibility? So we're at this point, and this is our basic assumption, is that all impervious is treated the same. If you put treatment on that, okay, so you are slowing that down, there is a way to get a credit for doing that, but you're not ever, you're still going to use the public system at some point. It will run off your property at some point at a slightly higher level. So that's kind of the basic scientific piece behind it. I don't know if that really clears that up, but I think, a lot of people say, well, I have a bigger parcel than the people next door to me. I have more room for the land to pick that up. That's true, but you have changed the drainage characteristics, and that runoff is going to impact cumulatively the whole community. And you are responsible as the city to make sure that that's managed appropriately. That's why we have the drainage. Every 500 square feet of improvements you make, you have to do a stormwater management plan. There's a reason for that.
Do you agree at all that if we were to split from, 30% is taxpayer money and, 70% is a fee, that in fact the amount of credits could potentially be tweaked on that fee because you're already offsetting public use?
I look at credits a little bit differently, okay?
Okay.
Credits are meant to provide a property owner back with something if the city is saving some cost. what are they doing on their property that saves the public some money? So your program costs then are impacted. So what does your program make up? What's in your program now? Mm-hmm. What are the program costs that are related to what that homeowner is doing on their property? So if they're doing a two-year storm, they're controlling a two-year storm, and they're doing treatment on that, what does that do to your program? Well, long-term, it helps you, right? You're controlling and treating stormwater, but only part of your program is around the actual runoff. You also have all the maintenance you're doing on your existing system. What they do on their site doesn't affect what you have to do for the investment in your existing system. So we look at the different pieces of the program, and we try to tie that back as closely as we can to what's the benefit that the public is getting, because everybody's paying into this, right, mm-hmm. for that action. Because if lots of credits are established, which is a good incentive, it does mean that there are other costs that have to be picked up by everybody else. So two things about the concern around kind of keeping the rate as low as you can and low-income folks is that where's mm-hmm. that balance of rewarding people for doing the right thing, offsetting public costs so that you can keep the rate low, as opposed to giving back a lot of money that maybe is not getting the city a benefit, but is a good thing to be doing. You just kind of like the idea. How does that affect all the other ratepayers? So you got to remember, you have a handful of people that'll want that 80% or 100% or you know, whatever that number is. Everybody else would be somewhat affected. And so before we make decisions about that, it'd be nice if we ran some more numbers for you mm-hmm, and to see how mm-hmm. it affects the rate.
Mm-hmm, right.
And yes. if I can go back to your comment about down to the square footage, what I'd ask that you do before you make that small an issue is to look at the tools that we're using and ask your GIS folks, you know, how close can we get? Because in other communities that have gone to that, it becomes a very big appeal issue because we're using aerial photography. So the pixel size, the resolution, the clarity of the photography, you have human beings digitize the information. So there's some error built in. Is that 1% or 2%? What do your GIS folks tell you? Because if you go out and survey, what would be the difference? And so there's a little bit in there. So we try not to go into the square foot, but I think your point about tenths of a percent or a half of mm-hmm. a percent or something makes more sense to me that you think you have 1,000 square feet, or you have 800, and that would be 8/10 of a billion units. Something I would rather you think in those terms, but again, doing that will mean that the costs, higher. You'll get less revenue the smaller and smaller you make that. And so if you bring less revenue in, then you also have to look, how do you make up the difference in revenue? And the rate may have to be adjusted slightly to do that. So I think of it in the big picture, trying to make sure you get the revenue you need, and we distribute those costs as evenly as we can and as fairly as we can. So as you're making all those decisions, please just tell us what you want us mm-hmm. to run. We'll run those models for you. We'll give you that information, and then you can make some informed decisions about what you think the best way to go is.
One thing I would want to know, because I think that's a really helpful point, if we did do it by 1/10 of a unit or whatever that was, how much more the actual program would cost because of the additional staff time that would be taken to handle those appeals? Are we actually as a community paying more, even if, yeah. you know, so...
It's a tough one to judge, I think.
It would be good if you did, if you were able to run those numbers to know if we'd have to raise rates for the lowest level. Yeah.
We did look quickly at if you had used a 500-square-foot unit mm-hmm. as opposed to 1,000-square-foot, mm-hmm. and the costs... revenue loss because of mm-hmm. smaller units, it would be about $100,000, which means you have to take that $100,000, and depending which program you put, we'd have to spread that across all the
nice
users
rate.
Again. So it may not be a huge amount, but we have to account for that. So some people are going to make up pretty well. I'm okay with doing that, but I think mm-hmm. the cost then of getting it so small that you have lots and lots of people saying you're off by 4 feet is not the best use of your administrator.
Right. So other localities, how have they done? What are the smallest units they use?
I think pretty much everybody in Virginia is using the equivalent residential unit. And so their units are 2,500, 2,800 square feet because they've estimated their residential. And then they allow half. They allowed you to round to half. Mm-hmm. So that would be in, you know, somewhere 1,200 to 1,400 square feet. Would not be unusual. We can double check with Lynchburg, but I think that's about right.
So for somebody like me who has 1,500 feet of impervious surface, mm-hmm. I'd be paying for 2,500 feet. So the small homeowners would really be bitten more than they would otherwise.
It's amazing how many are between 1,000 and
1,500. Because I think mine's pretty average. It's a little brick box.
Yeah, the average in town is about 1,900 square feet for single-family homes. That's the average when we did the kind of the median mm-hmm. study of that. We did some samples. So I think the approach you've already taken by using 1,000 square feet has got you closer to where you want to be. Those smaller homes that are less than 1,000 are at one building unit. And if you want to go smaller, you can do that. There's a cost to do that. So as long as you know, I just want to make sure you're informed and you get all the information you need to make those decisions.
Because there are so many small houses in the city of Charlottesville, as Kristen mentioned, I would like to see it just to be less than 1,000, like maybe 500 or something.
Like 500. Okay. I mean, we certainly can do that. And as I said, then the cost slightly, you can't just take 1,000.
Yes, I understand.
That's cool.
And I think what we're looking at tonight is a first reading, so some of those details we can work out between now and the next meeting.
So are there other comments before we go to a motion?
So I apologize. If we pass this on first reading, knowing we're going to make a lot of changes in what we were given, do we do that or do we wait another meeting?
That's why we have that higher number there.
Well, I know, but there's other things like the rounding issue and the appeals issue. I mean, there's a number of things in here that
may have another reading. You have a second reading to go.
Okay.
You may have to wait for one more meeting, extra meeting.
I
think that we need to make sure that our second reading is not on the consent agenda because we'll have some discussion.
No, of course not.
You have, I think, two options.
Okay.
You can't have a first reading tonight, but it sounds like there are enough changes that before you have a second reading, you will have to amend your first reading.
Okay.
The other option is to defer the first reading till your next meeting and let staff make the changes that you've suggested tonight. Either way will work.
Either way, it's the sort of same time frame.
And our task was just to try to come to some decision that could inform the FY14 budget. So, however, those.
Well, it sounds like we may be ready to make the big decisions, which are. Do we do it with bonding or not? Do we do it with some city funding or not? And what proportion of that? And it sounds like, I mean, just from what I'm hearing, the issue that we might leave a little bit murkier is what the size of a building unit is.
But that's going to affect the rate.
And exactly what the rate is.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see all of this together.
Why can't we do a building unit of 500?
Well, but the rate's going to change.
We'd want to know how much it costs.
The rate will change because we're going through the hybrid.
It'll be a little bit
arrangement. I mean, I would like to see this revised and brought back before we vote on anything. I just think it would be cleaner and it would be more straightforward for the public.
It's basically the same.
I'm ready, but I can handle it.
We're not kicking the can down the road.
We're not kicking the can down the road. We just want to see this fine-tuned.
Can we? Am I clear that we're looking at keeping our tax rate, our $830,000 in the taxes, in the real estate taxes, and then adding a utility fee for that extra 1.6 and up? And bonding, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
There is bonding in the rate now.
Yeah. I'm probably in the minority, but my preference would be if we're going to create the utility tax to set it up to where it can generate $1.6 million and have that be the size of our water protection program and reallocate the existing $800,000 or $900,000 towards other city priorities.
And I think, I think you're right. You're in the minority on that.
So reducing the whole program by $1 million.
Well, again, I don't know that – I haven't heard any arguments from council as to why it has to be that number.
Well, I've asked and Ms. Smith has asked for information concerning the impervious surface that is publicly shared. And I would like to – and once I hear that, I will have a better equation in my head as to why that $800,000, was it the magic number or not.
And I think we have heard compelling evidence that we need to increase the amount we spend on this.
We've even seen a breakdown.
Yeah,
How it'll be spent.
And we've seen how it'll be spent. I think that's been very clear. I don't have any problem.
Again, nobody up here, including myself, is saying that we don't want or need to increase investment in stormwater upgrades. The question is, do we increase it 50%? Do we increase it 300%? What's the magic number? If we say we're going to increase it 50%, that's a significant improvement over today's reality. And then that frees up funds that we can use to upgrade our schools, to do all the other things that we've been talking about doing.
But I think most of these increases are things that are either required by law or by our own commitments. And I think, I don't share your concern about
and that. And there were people where they're not at the, in the among the task force who wanted to actually put more money in right away.
I'm sure
there I mean, there was but, a desire you know, to be and, more and some who wanted to be more aggressive, more
sure
less,
there
and
were.
That this was a compromise.
Well,
and remember, that, I mean, as the more money we put in from the general fund, the rate goes down. So if we get this information, and we may want to adjust that relationship, if we find out there's more...
Although that would be a whole other set of mathematical calculations that I don't propose that we start at this point.
Well, I still just want to see what that number is to get an idea
I
where...
I think they've tried to find the sweet spot in the recommendation
that
they gave us.
It seems that we have a support for this idea. It also seems that we are not ready to adopt it today.
Okay, we hear you.
So we need to answer some of these questions, and we'll get the staff to work with you.
Yes.
And they come back next meeting.
Yeah, and just so I can kind of recap to make sure I have at least the majority of them right. So we're going to look at a billing unit of 500 square feet as opposed to 1,000. We'll look at the rate from that, presuming it's a mix of funding. Okay.
Yes.
We'll give you information on the amount of impervious that includes public right-of-way, which we hadn't given you before. So you can look at how that impacts, what could that would look like in billing units.
Right.
So you can kind of make that decision whether that 830 is the right number to be moving in.
Also,
what else?
And then include the advisory committee.
Language on the advisory committee.
Also the credits. I was thinking that we'll be doing more than 50% credits.
All right, we'll look at how we can
isn't
do that.
Isn't that more within your regulation phase?
That's not in this
ordinance. The credits themselves aren't even articulated.
It just says there will be credits.
Credits are 40% it says.
Right, and so currently the ordinance contemplates or presents there will be a credit system.
The future development.
And we will bring that back to you at a later date.
Yes.
Because we do, you know, it would be valuable to engage a couple of other smart people to help think through what your feedback's been and what some of the impacts are. On
reason
the
why
that,
I only
that 40%
said
was 50, in the PowerPoint, but it's not
reason
in the
reason why I said it was 51% was because that is a more the over the threshold of profit for investor.
But that's not in the ordinance. That
it's
was in the PowerPoint,
okay.
So we don't need to deal with that. And we need to deal with it by January.
Our recommendation is the ordinance say you will have that in place before the bills go out. And
some
we'll
credits.
Work, we'll work with a group of folks to get you there because that's more of a it's a great opportunity for more public input to figure out what that looks like.
I would also like to see some mechanism of helping low-income families. I know it's not part of the ordinance, but something
we
before.
We can give you some recommendations of what other communities have done outside of the
okay.
of the policy. Yep.
And is there any place in the ordinance for some of the suggestions that we heard tonight about green infrastructure and or is that?
Well, I mean, I think that it's fundamentally part of what we would expect the master drainage plan would do because we've said the intention is to integrate drainage issues and water quality issues, and one of the ways to effectively do that is with green infrastructure.
Okay.
So that's part of the master plan.
Are you clear on most issues?
I think so.
You don't take
and we'll be reminded tomorrow.
You don't take
we are a five-headed monster, but we managed to move forward.
Before we do that, the staff will need some clarity on some of the issues that were raised concerning whether or not we consider doing tax cuts versus taking some money and putting it towards. I'm not asking that for tonight. I'm just saying as we're moving forward, we need to have that discussion. We're talking about the budget on Thursday night. We've been working for the last couple of months to get our budget to balance, and we're getting closer. And so we need to have that discussion as we're moving forward.
I don't think you have three votes to cut taxes
between
now and the budget.
I'm not sure you're right.
Well, that may be.
Well, that's why we need some clarity.
But maybe this would be a good time to find out that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
And thank you.
You take 5 minutes break.
You're really a great job. You all
thank
you.
Fabulous job. Thank you.
Patient.
You take 5 minutes break.